Now you have the opportunity to buy a unique poster containing a screenshot of every single millennial stream ever. The entire smorgasbord, the full gamut, the whole shebang, all in one incredible display, commemorating the first decade of this festival. Available in portrait or landscape. Buy yours now.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial X. This is now the Scotland Banquet, and I have a veritable cross-section of Scottish content creators, especially of a distant variety. We have No Chance, Unity News Network, Herd Immunity News, and of course, Count Dankula. So welcome to all of you for and thanks to all of you for agreeing to appear. It's quite a mix. We were talking beforehand about Nicola Sturgeon before we went on air, and given that she is an entertaining figure, an interesting figure to talk about to some extent, I think it would be fun to just begin by talking about her. So,
we were just talking about her being a clam digger.
You said it. I have no idea what you mean by that, and no knowledge of this whatsoever. I'm sure she's a happily married woman.
Yeah. She reminds me of that. Do you know the guy that founded BrewDog, James Watt? Just to pretend he's not a raging homosexual who sits down to pee, but he's married to this woman. You just listen to him speak. He's got this, like, funnily enough, in his spare time with his millions, he travels the sea and does fishing. So he's a big seaman, but he's just screaming at him.
I mean, I don't want to live in a world where Nicola Sturgeon gets more pussy than me.
Too late.
Val McDermid, who is our friend, actually owns a women's, she sponsors Raith Rovers women's football club, and there's actually pictures of them, and she's there, and she's got her arm round, like, the young ladies playing football. And I don't think ladies football is necessarily known as a hotbed of heterosexuality.
Yeah, no, indeed. I wouldn't want to see photos off.
I really want to go to the changing room and shake all their hands. Tell me when they're in the shower, I'll go in and do it then.
It just sounds awful, but I did read that Val McDermott helped Sturgeon with her autobiography. So I knew that they were connected, but I didn't know there was anything else. But obviously, they've obviously got something in common. So that's clear. You know, you've gone right over the edge there, Dank, already, right at the start.
Yeah,
it was, first comment.
Every year, I need to one up myself, man. Like, I have to improve. I set the bar too high.
Here's something that it does interest me, and I'd love to hear what you all think about this. A year and a half ago, one of my first Substack essays, I said, and this is why I don't make predictions, right? This is a really good, useful lesson here. I said that the Scottish independence thing is probably inevitable. It's going to happen eventually. And, you know, I voted against it in 2014. I sort of regret that now. I think it's just an inevitability. That's how what I wrote there. That was a year and a half ago. And then within, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks, the whole thing came tumbling down. Sturgeon, I think she stepped down, and Humza Yousaf replaced her, and then that was just a long-running, well, a short-running disaster.
The best thing was, you know, the straw that actually broke the camel's back, the straw that literally, like, there was multiple things that obviously led to Nicola Sturgeon's downfall, right? But the straw that broke the camel's back was that fucking guy that raped two women, even though he was, like, big and buff and had a fucking Mike Tyson tattoo on his face. Pierre went, oh, I'm a woman now. And then they were going to put him in a women's prison. It caused blowback. Fucking Sturgeon couldn't handle it and stepped down. It was literally because of that. That was the thing that did it.
She denied that that was the reason. But yeah, it does say that happened very shortly before, didn't it?
Yeah, and it's like, as soon as like there was a huge kickoff about that, it seemed like that's when Sturgeon went, fuck this. And just like fucking stepped down.
Well, it's interesting because this is an issue that really... It breaks a lot of politicians, a lot of celebrities even, because it's obviously that they're saying something that everyone thinks they don't really believe. And they're pretending to have an understanding of things or not to have an understanding of things. And it's obviously not true. I mean, everyone knows that that guy should not be in a women's prison. That is absolutely insane and extremely irresponsible of the state to put a man like that in a women's prison.
I don't know, man. I don't think he would last in Cotton Vale.
The women in Cotton Vale were harder than him. That was the thing.
No, exactly. The women in Cotton Vale raped the trannies. Like, it's the other way around.
I wonder if they have their own football team.
Yeah, they probably do, by the way, man. Probably. They just look like they're just the size of the All Blacks.
Sturgeon was just like that. You remember that Dutch story about the wee boy? He just didn't have enough fingers to put in the dike, you know? Stop it from gushing everywhere.
But that story was perfect, though, because it was just, as you say, this big butch guy with a pink bomber jacket on, and you've just to pretend it's a woman. And I think because they had the Greens whispering in their ear, they were held at gunpoint, the SNP, by the Greens, where they just had to accept all this like tranny nonsense like without question. There's no critical thought involved. They're just like, well, this is the hill we die on, and they did.
Well, but it's the same everywhere, though. I mean, everyone has to. It's all these different countries and parties have all had to go along with this, but I don't doubt that the Green Party was part of it.
It's interesting you said, Colin, about the independence thing, because I mean I still will be pro UK regardless, but if the SNP didn't have the woke baggage, I think they would have a clear run at independence just now. They would be able to say, look at England, look at the state it's in. We want to get back to doing what we do best. We've got oil, we've got gas, you know, we've got amazing tourism, we've got great land. We've just moved in different directions. Whilst I wouldn't vote for that, you know, I don't think that would be unpalatable to a lot of people right now, because they would almost see it as a bit of a life raft away from the insanity that's unfolding. But they're incapable of doing that. They want to offer more NATO, more EU, more woke. And until they ditch that and go back to the sort of sensible salmon era, they will struggle to get it over the line.
Well, it was really, just before anyone else chips in, it was interesting to hear Salmon talking about this, about the Sturgeon and the tranny stuff. And like, this was after like, about a month, 2 months later. And he was saying, it's like a nonsense ideology. No one understands it. And I thought, bloody hell, like an active politician couldn't say that. Like someone who's in the system, as it were, couldn't afford to say that.
Well, Joanna Cherry made an attempt, but then she ended up getting like exiled from like the whole of the SNP.
And I'm sure Isla Bryson, which is the buff tranny prisoner. I'm sure even Isla could open a bottle of ketchup without dying, so I think Isla's got the last laugh there. Is that how, was that confirmed? Is that how he actually died, opening sauce?
Who was that?
Alex Salmond. That was in the paper.
I just heard he gave a speech in Macedonia. I think it was
opening ketchup at a dinner party and fucking died.
Was he doing that? Oh my god!
Look it up. It's insane that.
Well, that's the
he
other
was sitting thing, there yeah. shaking it and like slapping the bottom of it, and he just get pissed off and his heart shut down.
I get Grok to do an AI generated image of Alex Salmond struggling to open ketchup, and it was perfect.
If you want, you can send it to me. I'll put it up on screen.
the thing is, even with Salmond, though, like, and I was going quite hard at the time because a lot of people, like, Salmond was a big proponent of open borders. Like if you look at back maybe 2015, 16, when it was all the Syria refugee stuff. He was really shilling for more refugees and he really pushed it. I mean, like, No Chance talks about this a lot as well, and it is so true. The SNP are just so duplicitous. I mean, they deny the existence of a Scottish people, you know, yes. and Salmond has been a big proponent of it. And they were doing it from a position of like 97-98% white Scotland, but again, steadily it's getting chipped away at.
Well, did you ever see the party political broadcast for his ALBA party after he got ousted from the SNP? He created this new party, and holy shit, it was as bad as it could be. You know, like they've got someone in some Hebridean island, and it's like the only brown in the village, kind of thing. And they've made sure to get him on it. This kind of thing. It's just one minority after another, and even despite that, though, I think that Salmond was sort of he was of an older generation than the likes of Hamza Yousaf and Sturgeon. So I think he had some leeway to just be honest about things that they didn't, mm-hmm. In the sense that he did say what that thing I've quoted. But yeah, the more interesting thing for me is about the independence issue, because for a long time, it just seemed it's definite. It's just going to happen. If not now, then in 5 years or 10 years, maybe 15 years, but probably quite soon and definitely eventually. So, I mean, what do you all think about that? Like, where is it now after Hamza?
I don't know if Swinney can bring it back. Maybe he can, because it's kind of old school, you know?
It's brutal, isn't it?
I don't know. It's like, it's pure, we had, oh my God, I've just seen the tagline.
The tagline is, picture does not go with salmon.
Oh no. He's even sweating and turning red. That's fucked up, man.
It's brutal.
Oh no. Fuck
me. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. About the independence thing.
I know we basically had big Stuggy, then we had Hamza, the very very Scottish man, and now we've got fucking Skeletor. Like they're not bringing their best, and it's whoever's the face of the party decides whether or not that independence is going to swing one way or the other. Right, I think if Salmond was brought back and put in charge, I reckon he actually could deliver it. If he had been brought back into the SNP and just put back in charge, I think we definitely would have got it. But instead, we got fucking idiots, and they were more focused on letting men get changed in front of your five-year-old daughters than actual fucking independence.
That's true.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the SNP can never have independence when they're part of the European Union.
True.
And not only that, they're really suckling at the teat of the United Nations. Every single diktat that comes out from every NGO, they are there. And I used to debate this with them during the 2019 election. I says, how the fuck can you be independent when you want to be ruled by Brussels? You're just handing over your leash from Westminster to Brussels. And they had nothing for that as well. The other thing I'd say about Alex Salmond is he was a net zero fanatic.
It's true.
He came up to Grangemouth, where I live, and he was campaigning for the refinery to stay open. but at the same time, he wanted net zero. And I actually met him and spoke to him and tried to explain him to this. And he just went red in the face.
He may have been having a heart attack, man. Like, fuck it.
Maybe that was just part of it. I don't know.
Maybe you killed him. Maybe you triggered the smaller one, and then later on the bigger one came. Maybe that was you.
There's something to that, I think. Aye, but seriously, there's nothing that surprises me more than what happened in the last general election, because everyone wanted the majority of the electorate wanted Scottish independence, and Labour had one seat, remember? After 2019, they had one seat. Then all of a sudden they said, nah, we'll go with Keir Starmer. We like him. And Labour ended up with 37 seats. So the polling now suggests that they've gone back the other way and they want the SNP back. But I just think it's a complete disaster what's going on. Swinney is just totally vacuous. I don't know if you ever saw Swinney when he was confronted by the leader of the Family Party.
I saw that.
No, and I've not seen it.
That was classic.
He was asking about the sex education in schools, and he was getting into it. Describing what the schools were teaching kids, and they were live streaming this, I think, on YouTube at the time. And they're like, oh, I don't think this is appropriate. And he's like, well, if it's not appropriate for a room full of adults, like, how is it appropriate for children? It was a kind of masterclass. I have to give me his dues there. It was, forgot his name again, the Family Party.
It was Richard Lucas. Family Party guy who I had on the show on Herd Immunity News. And we played the clip, and the wee leftist woman is waving her arms when he said, and you take the banana and you dip it into the chocolate. And she was freaking out. But they were reading this to 6 and 7 year olds, I believe. So you think, you ask yourself, where do you go from Scottish independence talking about oil to putting rapists in women's prisons and teaching 5 and 6 year olds that anal sex is fine?
Fuck. If you actually look at it, though, what the British state has done a very good job of is basically putting a blanket over all forms of resistance movements or whatever you want to call it. You look at Northern Ireland, where, I mean, I've been watching quite a lot of documentaries about it recently. I mean, they basically took Sinn Féin, say what you like about it, and then basically just made them all politicians and gave them a wage. And they've done the same to the SNP as well. These are people that are all earning 56, well, more than that, 60, 70K in the Scottish Parliament. It's a nice, cushy job. Mm. Same as down in London. You've got your office in central London. They don't seem to have the hunger to actually want to do anything. They like to talk about independence, but whether they would actually have the drive to deliver on it. And that's where if I was a genuine Scottish nationalist who believed in Scottish independence, you would just see them as just absolute traitors and people who have gone on the payroll of the British state. And they agree with all the big things. They agreed on the COVID scam. They agree on the net zero scam. They push the immigration even more so. So what is it they're actually offering? They're not offering anything.
I made this point a couple of years ago. I said that the SNP, they don't care about the Scottish culture because they want multiculturalism. They don't care about the Scottish people because they want mass immigration. And they don't care about Scottish sovereignty because they want to join the EU. So it's difficult to see what about Scotland it is that they actually like or care about or want to preserve.
The thing they're doing to preserve Scottish heritage is they're putting the signs at train stations in Gaelic. So that's about it. The police cars have the Gaelic translation, but other than that, they're admitting that they're bringing in people and they're calling them new Scots.
The new Scots, yeah.
And then they're giving them preferential kind of treatment when it comes to elections. They're putting them in seats they know they're going to win. They've done the same when they were trying to do the women 50-50 thing, where they were trying to get 50% of female representation in the Scottish Parliament, where they basically just sat them in the seats they were guaranteed a win. And they're doing the same with the new Scots. They're putting them in seats to up the representation. Mm-hmm. And I think last year when Dank was on, I made you aware of the Refuweegee is what they're calling the refugees in Glasgow. It's embarrassing.
I noticed as well, Hamza Yousaf, whenever he shouted out a candidate for any election, it was never a white person. It was always brown or black, mostly brown. So anytime he shouted anybody out, it was just always a brown person. And that was Hamza. And I still see that him on Twitter. Anytime I see him pop up on my timeline, I'm like, I thought you were leaving. I thought you were fucking leaving. Fuck off. Because he said like multiple times, I'm going to do it. I'm going to leave. I'm going to go back to Pakistan. And he never fucking does.
No. It's like these Hollywood actors who say that they're going to move to Canada and they never do. Yeah, they never fuck off.
Wasn't Bono meant to drive his sports car off a cliff when Trump won?
That's right.
Oh God! If only, can you imagine how? All right, okay. Well, about the new Scots thing, that actually goes back. Definitely to Salmon's era. I think the 2000s. I'm pretty sure I saw that in about 2005 the first time. I might be misremembering that, but it's been there for a long time. And the thing is, how the hell else do you end as you were saying about sort of parachuting in ethnic minority candidates? How else do you end up with Hamza Yousaf and Anna Sarwar? Both, I mean, how the hell in a country like Scotland are the two biggest parties headed by ethnic minorities? It's just, it like statistically impossible that there's, I think there is something about that part of Glasgow though, and I'll say again that I don't know Glasgow well, not as well as I should, but apparently that area, South Glasgow, is dominated by this kind of stuff, like with the ethnic nepotism and whatever, block voting and whatever.
It's called Pollock. Just say Pollock.
Like, Pollock Shields. Pollock Shields.
Yeah.
Pollock Shields.
Yeah.
Because that's where the big split between Hamza and Anna Sarwar is to do with their families. I can't remember exactly which ones, but I think Anna Sarwar's father, he owned United Wholesale, and the Yousaf family, they owned another cash and carry, and then they had a rivalry over the cash and carry business.
And bloody bastard bitch.
Sarwar's lot stayed with Labour because he was the first Scottish Labour Muslim MPs, and he's now actually over again in Pakistan as a governor. And then Yousaf's family, they all jumped on the SNP bandwagon. So there's quite a big split in the whole Pollock Shields Asian Pakistani world. Some went to SNP, some went Labour. Both Anna Sarwar and both Hamza Yousaf both went to Hutchison's Grammar School as well, which is a private school in that area. So, you know, they came from multi-millionaire families, very, very well off, very high up in the Pakistani community there. And, you know, just totally unrelated to the realities of what's going on out there in wider Scotland.
Yeah, sorry, I was looking for a clip of Hamza pretending. I'm sure you all saw it. He was, I've got it, right. Okay, I'm going to have to just, I'm going to play this. This is so cringe. Hold on a second. This was him about a year ago, maybe less now. And he was, you'll see right now. Hold on a second.
Glasgow, let's hear you! All right. All right, we have a crowd in the house. All right. We said, go on yourself. Get that loudy.
Oh, my God. No. That's so cringe. Fucking Christ.
Oh. That's bad. He's notorious for it. Anytime he's in front of the scum, his accent changes. Like, there's clips of him different in front of different crowds, and yeah, he's...
He actually just developed a lisp. Did anybody start talking with lisping?
I did see that, actually. But it's funny, talking about nepotism, like the first thing he'd done as first minister was meet with the kind of head of Pakistan to agree immigration from Pakistan, increase, student visas and stuff like that to Scotland and investing in Pakistan, and you're like, it's convenient that. And some of that Kemi Badenoch, whatever, Olo Kemi, whatever her real name is, she was the same. Like, she spent her time in government, having signing millions upon millions of taxpayer money to Nigeria. She opened the first ever mall in some town in Nigeria, and you're like, it's funny how all these people that are just as British, Scottish, English, Welsh as the rest of us seem to have their homeland front and centre when they have any pull to do something for them.
Yeah. Well, since you mentioned her real name, it is Olukemi Olufuntu Adegoke Badenoch. I've mentioned that.
Bless you.
Just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
I don't know, that sounded like a fucking voodoo curse.
It is.
Fucking, I just said that out loud and my furniture started floating.
the thing as well about Kemi is that you could maybe understand the likes of David Lammy, who's, you know, his parents came here, he was born and brought up here. Her mother came here as a health tourist, gave birth to her here, and then buggered off back to Nigeria and then brought her up in America as well. Like, she wasn't even brought up here. She was born here by chance as an NHS tourist. Her mother is an NHS tourist.
Who would want to travel to the fucking NHS? It's fucking shit. Absolutely fucking
better
terrible,
than
man.
Nigeria's. Better than Nigeria's.
That's a long fucking layover when it takes like 9 months to get a fucking appointment, man. Fucking hell.
I mean, look, it's just fucking mental. I don't know. This stuff just seems to get so crazy and worse all the time. I mean, I don't know how old she is. That she must be. Let's find out how old she is. But the point is that this has been going on for so long. That was 44 years ago that happened. Mm-hmm. Jesus. But yeah, to get back to Hamza, does anyone like him? I mean, does he have any popularity at all?
No, I've got friends who are like SNP diehards. Absolute diehards, and as soon as he got voted in, they were all like, like they were like really unhappy about it. And one, I had one friend who fucking tried to confide in me, and he went, I just kind of hoped that if we got Scottish independence, it would be delivered by someone who was Scottish. And I was like, bro, that's racist. You can't say that. Oh, man.
It's like, you got independence, but at what cost?
Yeah, yeah. I know.
What did it cost you?
Yeah. Who is he popular with? He's popular with all the right people. I mean, I'm sure he will go and get a well-paid job somewhere with some NGO. Some UN type organizations. That's what he said. He said he wants to fight, and this was very interesting. He said he wants to fight racism, anti-Semitism, misogyny, wherever he can. So he'll be lined up for some job somewhere, like some open society type role. And I think I can't remember exactly, but he gets somewhere between 2 to 4K a month for the rest of his life because of his stint as first minister. And like, that's the other thing is these people, they go in, they do it. I mean, it's embarrassing. Like, they do it for a year and then they move on. It's shameful.
It's also like, he fucking seethed for like weeks because of that fucking video of him falling off the fucking scooter and everyone was laughing at him. And he was basically doing like interviews with fucking newspapers and all that. And it was essentially a, it's not funny tour. Like, that's what it was. He was seething about that everyone was making fun of him because he fell on a fucking scooter.
Look, I mean, if that happened, the only thing you can do is say, yeah, I know, it's funny, isn't it? Anything else is going to backfire.
I've teach my kids that. See, if you keep biting, if someone's winding you up and you keep biting, they're going to keep winding you up. You need to just kind of shrug it off, have a laugh and move on. But you've done the worst thing you could do. But that video was even funnier because the way he was gliding down that hole. Like, it wasn't like he was on the scooter just scooting away. It was like a kid. at Christmas. Just in
he felt like a toddler. Just hit the ground like a sack of shite. But like, if that something like that happens to you, you want it to be filmed. You want that on fucking camera. I was at the fucking Scottish YouTubers night out, and I was walking backwards, and I was steaming. And I walked into a bollard, literally backflipped over it, like both legs like up in the fucking air and like somersaulted backwards over this bollard. Got up and I looked around and went, did anybody catch that on film? Literally 20 YouTubers in front of me, not a single one of them were filming. That man, nobody caught it. And I was so upset. I wasn't upset about falling. I was far more upset at the fact it wasn't caught on camera, because I would have posted that online instantly. Because that's fucking funny. But he was just being a salty arsehole about it.
I was not blaming racism as well, as per usual.
Oh, what, racism made him fall?
No, I just mean like the people slagging him, basically. It's a lot of racist attacks against me falling off the scooter.
The Jim Crow fucking kicked his scooter off under him or something. Like.
But talking about like people not liking him, like even, as Dank said, SNP supporters don't like him. I think I mentioned this last year as well. But I remember I got a guy from, I'm sure it was Kilmarnock, charged for sending him a letter.
That's right.
An email, sorry. He sent him an email basically saying he was angry at his white speech that he gave. And he used terminology, something along the lines of, if you don't like it here, leave. And he used that as, that's technically racist. You're telling a brown man to leave the country. He doesn't belong. And he's got this guy charged with racism. And the guy was an SNP supporter.
That's right.
Diehard. And I get his all his devices seized and stuff. And he was also going through chemotherapy at the time, this guy. So it was that's how he treats his own supporters.
Was that when he was Justice Secretary?
Yeah.
I think I heard about this. He was basically, I mean, it's pretty obviously abusing his position.
He's a scumbag.
Yeah, none of these things about these people, as you say, none of them are actually very nice. You know, like, they all do this to people. There's been numerous cases. People have maybe sent them emails. And they know fine well if they report that to the cops are going to go to that person's door and they're going to ruin their life. They all do it. And they're really scummy that way. Instead of just being like, right, just delete, fuck it. Unless the guy turns up outside my house or at the constituency office, then it's a different story. But they do that to deliberately ruin these people's lives. They're scum. Like Hamza Yousef, they do that. He's best pals with that guy, Ammar Anwar. And they're bullies with it because they know white people are trained to be terrified if a brown person is angry with them. They know that. And they really do bully them. It's just it's disgusting the way they do it.
That Ammar Anwar's just he's a scumbag and a half. He's like just the race grifter in chief. He represents all any case he can get his hands on. I don't know if you've heard of the Sheikh Bayo case. That's right. That's Scotland's George Floyd, as Ammar Anwar's calling it.
He was representing the two Manchester
ones. I say he was.
As well. Someone actually made a really good point there on Odyssey. Andy said, yeah, he sued a nursery for racism as well. That's right. He sued the nursery accused of being racist.
He said they were racist, and then it turned out the two people that owned it were from Sri Lanka.
And then they dropped the case because, that's not going to stick. So it's just throwing racism at the wall until something sticks. But that Sheikh Bayo case, unironically is Scotland's George Floyd, because he was an angry black man with a knife that overdosed. he was on a drug called Flacker and ecstasy, I think. He had too much of it and he died in police custody. And now there's an ongoing court case to see what the police were thinking at the time when they're. It's like a mind reading exercise to see if there was any racist thoughts.
I was thinking, damn, he getting uppity.
Damn, they do have rhythm.
Oh my god. Well, apparently his fucking heart didn't, but
oh, that was bad.
Well, where did that happen, that Checo Bio case?
That was 2017.
Nice.
That was something about then.
Where was it again? I was gonna say Aberdeen, but I don't think so. Kirkcaldy.
Kirkcaldy, right? God, the thing is weird because I still think of these places like Aberdeen and Kirkcaldy. I still think of them as just completely white, but they're not. I mean, they haven't been. You know, I went to, maybe some of you will know this, a place called Tillicoutry. I was up in Scotland a few months ago, and we ended up there, and I knew this place a long time ago, like in 1990. And it's back then, of course, it was absolutely 100% white. And now, when I was there, it was about, I don't know, 4 p.m., and the schools were coming out, and it's like, I think about one in four kids was like non-white.
Yeah.
Staggering. The change
I was in Shetland a few months ago, and there's Africans in Shetland, and you're like, what? We've meant to believe there's some, like, some guy from, like, Mombasa who went, do you know where I want to go? Lerick. It doesn't happen. It's clearly they've been shipped around and dropped off.
I think so much of that is to do with the care jobs. Like, the Johnson government changed all the rules, and you will see loads of Africans driving about in cars doing the care jobs, and that's what most of them do. And they relaxed all the waivers and brought them over. And again, like the big immigration wave that Johnson allowed to happen, 21, 22, that just tipped the country over. Like, millions of people, and there was more immigration in that 2 year period than there was in the previous 17. If maybe don't quote me exactly on that, it might not have been exactly 17, but it was huge. Just what Johnson did, and I don't know if you saw the interview he did with the Financial Times of all people, and he said they had to do it to bring inflation down, because post COVID lockdowns, people didn't want to go back to work. People wanted to work from home. They were wanting more money, and that's why inflation was spiraling. So they just basically said, look, we have to bring in millions or else inflation will go out of control. So that's the thinking that you've got. Is,
and Dominic Cummings revealed that Boris Johnson had said to him that we need to increase immigration, because he said something like, because I want to be friends with the Financial Times.
That's what you're actually dealing with. Clearly there are a lot of people doing this for reasons that we all know, much more duplicitous, etc. But with Johnson, it really was, right, we need to bring down inflation, and I want to be friends with the FT, right? 2.5 million Africans. It's incredible.
And the thing you need to know about a lot of the workers that are coming over is that they can't do DBS checks to the same standards as Brits. We had quite a few people who got in touch with us about the care sector, and their parents were being looked after by Africans. Now, when they asked the company, what type of checks have you done? They said, we've done the DBS checks. For how long? And they said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, for how long? Where do you go back to the 16th? They said, well, they've only been in the country 6 months to 12 months, so that's all we've got to go on. Now, you're leaving your family in the hands of people who you know fuck all about.
True.
And they are prioritised for all the jobs. The agencies are on the ESG DEI quotas on steroids. And you see it in local councils as well, where the positions are being prioritised. Same with housing and everything else, if we're being perfectly honest. But Boris Johnson's real... his, the point you're making there, David, about the inflation... Well, the quantitative easing was off the scale.
That's right. He caused the inflation by the money printing. Exactly. And then they did the, and I've not coined this phrase, the human quantitative easing to try and, say what you want about David Icke, he coined the phrase problem, reaction, solution very eloquently. They create the problem, they then provide the reaction, and then in the end they show you the solution.
Hey, David, if you're watching, Merry Christmas. I know you're a big fan of Millennial.
What? Sorry, what were you saying, David?
We heard immunity about the it was human quantitative easing is what they did. They printed people. Like, they printed all the money, and then they just printed people to prop up the market.
We call it dial a voter. Like, we're just, you know, if the your own people won't vote for you, then you just ship in other ones from abroad and give them a bunch of free shit, because then, yeah, of course, the they're going to vote for you.
They're never going to vote for Boris Johnson, though. That's the thing. So it's a self-defeating. I mean, it doesn't even, it doesn't even make sense in a selfish way. It's except that, well, the Financial Times will now speak kindly of Boris Johnson. I mean, it's the treachery is just absolutely off the fucking scale, because he's going to land everyone, the whole country, with a problem for a very long time, let's say, just so that in the short term, in the immediate term, he'll be spoken well about. I mean, fucking hell.
Well, he got his book deal, didn't he? After he stepped down as PM, he gets his column in the Daily Mail, and, you know, he's bought the house in the Cotswolds outright. So, you know, all the dead, I mean, that's not including all the dead Ukrainians because of his bloody warmongering in Ukraine as well. You know, every single thing that Johnson did is just, it was a disaster. And so many people still, laughable, jolly Boris, when, you know, his treachery was even greater than even Blair. Well, it's pushing it.
That's what kind of annoys me. You hear people that are kind of conservative voters that will say, oh, it was Labour opened the borders. It was Labour. And you're like, maybe they opened the borders a little bit. But when you look at the Tories, as you mentioned, David, fucking record high immigration. And if they are getting into like the care sector, you even see it with the like security. Look at a football game. All the security is African. They're then bringing the illegals into hotels and giving them a fucking high-vis jacket to stand outside. But there was a scandal in Shettleston, here in East End of Glasgow, where there was these two Africans in a care home that were abusing the elderly in there. And that was a few months ago. And to expect these people just to come in and just care for these people as if they're one of their own, it's laughable.
So, to get back to the independence issue then, how does that seem like something that's just gone now? Or, I mean, it's obviously Alex Salmond's gone.
I don't think it'll ever fully go away. It'll always be there, because there's money in its advocacy. That's why it'll never go away.
I see it as the carrot and the stick, where it allows the SNP to continue their grift of doing nothing for the country, mm-hmm. with the promise of independence. It keeps the votes coming in.
Well, blaming Westminster and the Tories for fucking everything. Yeah.
Aye. So it's like, here's the carrot and the stick, and look over there. And then even, it doesn't matter what scandals come out, people do have a short memory. So even though the scandals surrounding Nicola and her husband, they probably forgotten about that now. Probably don't care. Mm-hmm. And as long as they mention independence enough when they're on the TV, they'll be out to the polls, kind of voting away again.
It's a strange thing. The devolution thing, it kind of started well. And this is something I've said quite a few times, in the sense that, you know, you had people like Donald Dewar in there. I can't remember them all now, but there were quite a few who seemed genuinely like worldly, statesmen, like well-educated and all this. And now, holy shit, I mean, it's been 25 years and the decline is so, I mean, it had happened really within 10 years, I think, where they're really just a bunch of, they should be local councillors, if that, but they've been elevated, they're politicians because this thing exists. And I just think it's quite sad. I mean, you know, I'm not against, I understand why independence matters to a lot of people. And this is why I said, I do think it feels, or it did then, it felt inevitable, because people want to be, they want independence. But of course that's totally contradicted by wanting to be in the EU. So I think a lot of it is they set their identity as I'm not English. Like, we're not English. That's it. And so then anyone can be Scottish, except perhaps the English. Which, I saw a woman on Twitter the other day moaning about all the English coming up to Scotland. And I thought, Jesus, look around you. Can't you see what's happening?
Yeah, yeah. It's just they're not fighting the right war. I mean, it's clear there is a war on white people around the world. You know, that's the number one issue. But people are just they're just in la la land, and the whole independence debate is just it's not really dealing with the issues that matter. It's just like dealing with administrative stuff. And I think you're right that I think probably independence of some sort may happen unless there is some sort of revolution in the UK and people's what they see people see as important to them changes. But Scotland does have a real very strong sort of public sector middle class, and they're all very woke and they're all very virtue signalling. And that, you know, independence argument does kind of appeal to them.
It was actually me that put that video out of that woman complaining about all the English right. moving to the islands. Right. And you saw people in the replies saying, oh, it's like this in Inverness, they're all moving here. And what they're describing is white flight. There's people moving from heavily diverse areas of England to Scotland because they see it as, you know, what the TV represents, do you know what I mean? It's like a white Scottish place where you can just chill out. There's no the busy city, all that. But there was also a scandal in Edinburgh where Edinburgh, the University in Edinburgh is heavily English. Mm-hmm. The radio station was run by a load of English students and they were kind of laughing and joking about kind of dominating the school. And there was this uproar about, oh, the English are coming here and getting educated. And then they go and pick their wee brother or their son or daughter up for the school and they're the only white kid in the class. And they're like, oh, we don't notice that one, but see the fucking English in that radio station?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. As you say, they're not looking at what's important. I'd much prefer to sit next to my neighbour than, I don't know, a stranger from halfway around the world.
But I mean, a lot of Scots are leaving as well. A lot of Scots are heading off to Australia, the States, New Zealand, parts of Europe. They're getting out because there's no future in this country for many, many people. If you're a wealth creator, why the fuck would you be here? You've been taxed up the yazoo. There's no environment being built here for a business whatsoever. You see that. Obviously, with the Grangemouth refinery just being down the road from me, Ratcliffe's off. He's done.
Yep.
He's taken his business elsewhere. Scotland will be wholly reliant on imported oil for 99% of the petrol stations around the country. Now, the interesting thing is they're getting the oil from the Norwegians from exactly the same spot that we would have been getting it. And that was always the SNP's joker. That was always a trump card, that we had oil. But then through the net zero, absolute psychopathy.
Yeah,
they've culled off themselves to have nothing other than whiskey, and they're campaigning. They're campaigning against, you know, alcohol abuse at the same time. So they've got absolutely nothing going for them other than being a dumping ground.
This is a really interesting thing because obviously Germany's done a similar thing, getting rid of its nuclear power plants. Yeah. So it's like you see these countries in the name of the climate change agenda completely fucking themselves.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. I mean, it's like a madhouse.
It is. And you bring this up. I've run in elections and spoken about this to the electorate. And it washes over them unless they're directly affected. You know, an army won't go to the barricades until it's on an empty stomach. And I fear that Scotland will have to go through the same crisis that they're having in the Republic of Ireland right now. David spoke about Sinn Féin and betraying the Irish completely and welcoming their doors, throwing open their hotel doors and their council property doors to everyone under the sun, apart from the Irish, and the SNP are doing the same here in Scotland. It's exactly the same treachery.
It's all part of the bigger picture, and they don't get that. They live in this wee bubble They don't see the bigger picture, of course, international finance, the military-industrial complex, certain groups of people who have very specific agendas. They are so far down the food chain from that these decisions, but they lap it up and they push it, and they do it with such virtue and such vigour. It is incredible. When traditionally the Republic of Ireland was a solid Catholic conservative country, Scotland was a Presbyterian, you know, Christian conservative country. And it's just been turned right on its head in the last 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, what do you guys think about the chances of reform in Scotland? I was quite surprised at the last election that they made up a lot of ground.
I think they'll do very well, to be honest with you, because Scotland still does have a very solid conservative base. I mean, you saw that 25% of people would back Trump. It was the most in Europe. I think reform will do actually very, very well, because there is still a lingering conservative, maybe 25-30% who are, you know, pro UK, they're anti woke, they are conservative. So I think reform, even though they are not really the answer, I think you're probably right, Marcus. I think they'll do very well.
I think they'll do pretty good. Like, in Scotland, it's already hard enough to be a Tory. I mean, at least there isn't that, you know, generational fucking hatred associated with reform because they're so new and all that. But and one thing that annoyed me is, see, because of the stupid little first past the post system, reform should have completely cleared up at that election. But because of like the weird way that the votes are counted, because they're a new party, there was lots that they missed out on. But that just means it's, by the way, PM Nigel Farage could very well be possible. It could happen.
Rupert Lowe is saying a lot of good stuff on Twitter. I see that a lot.
Is that Rupert Lowe saying that stuff, though? Or is it someone else saying it?
I don't know. Is there a puppet master?
There is. And the puppet, if you actually look, we did this a few weeks ago. Nicholas Lissack is handling Rupert Lowe's Twitter account.
Oh.
We've identified it. If you look at the way he structures the tweets, it's always three sentences. So Nicholas Lissack, I can't prove it 100%, is running Rupert Lowe's social media accounts. And one of our researchers did a lot of interesting work on Mr. Lissack, a very interesting pedigree. Let's just put it that way. And I am very, and I know this might sound twatty or anything like that, but reform are part of a much bigger power push, which is to put in the likes of the AFD, to put in the likes of Marine Le Pen, to put in Geert Wilders, because, and Colin, you correct me if I'm wrong, the Zionist, you know, power structure is moving far more to the right now, especially with everything that's happened in Gaza. So it suits them to have leaders who are more right-wing. And sadly, I just see reform as unwittingly part of that. And that's why Musk is supporting them, just like he's back in the AFD.
So you're stuck with Labour and Tories again? Well, you go back to the beginning again. I think people will give reform a chance.
I think they will. I think people are fighting the battles from 5 years ago Reform will just be a containment mechanism for the growing anger that people have out there.
Well, there's nowhere else to go, really, when you look at it. You look at the early polling for the next election, 2029, and as I say, you've got people going back that they've pissed off with Labour, so they're going back to the SNP now because they've got nothing else to do. But Reform are making grounds. Now, I'm not in Reform. I was in the Brexit Party purely and solely to get us out of the European Union, which I'm still waiting on, by the way, and that's another subject. But the whole thing about reform is they're offering something new. Are they perfect? No. Do they have links to people that make you slightly concerned? Yes. But they're a damn sight better than what we've got right now in the UK and in Scotland.
Well, they're certainly not in any of the other Scottish parties.
Yeah, well, there is no real centre-right option in Scotland other than reform. And I'm not including the Tories in that either.
Well, Reform recently kicked out one of the Scottish
candidates, yep, whatever they had for.
He did.
Because he's the sins of his father.
Yeah.
His dad was part of, was it the UDA or something? I can't remember what it was. It was something anyway. And because of the family links, he got deselected, which I think is just outrageous.
Yeah, they've become mega sensitive. Yeah, they're really, really sensitive.
I also like hope not hate, kind of go through their candidates and pick them apart, which, yeah, again, also isn't a good sign.
They've denied that. I've spoken to people in Reform about this. And
no, they've admitted it. Admitted
it. Richard Tice admitted it. Gawain Towler admitted he did it for years.
Yeah, but not in a direct reference to using them to screen their candidates. But I think they used the material that Hope Not Hay had found.
But they're like,
you know, as evidence.
They claimed a boy I know personally was part of, which the kind of, no, the BNP, what's the band, or National Action or something? It was the band. He was part of National Action.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, like, a lot of the research is just nonsense. It's,
yeah,
like, it was never, he didn't even know the National Action people, but. Because Hope Not Hate said so, it's now fact. So even entertaining them is bad news to me. It does ring alarm bells. I can agree that they're the best option probably we have, but they're not going to do anything that you would want. There's not going to be mass deportations. I mean, they get rid of a lot of their hardline anti-immigration people.
Mm-hmm. I think your point, Marcus, is right. If I was being a pragmatist and you were to say, well, who would you bring in who's closer to you? Well, clearly it's the Reform Party, but that's still so far away from where we need to be. And, you know, I just think even the name itself, Reform, I mean, this country doesn't need reform. I mean, it needs a rocket, you know, up its backside. It needs a revolution. And it's, if you were to say to me, would I rather have Nigel Farage or Starmer as PM, I'd have Farage. But then there is also the risk of what Farage may do and who he may get involved with. The same with Trump as well, especially in the coming years. These guys are far more hawkish when it comes to war issues, you know, and
well, the other thing is that Farage has said he wants, similar to the H-1B thing, you know, he wants immigration from Pakistan and India, and because of the EU. Like, now that we're out of the EU, we can be global Britain and have people coming in from these glorious other parts of the world. So you end up with even worse. I mean, who the fuck? Well, the British people voted Brexit, so obviously they don't want more Dutch and Swedes and Germans. They obviously want Pakistanis. That is just so dishonest.
See, when you've actually heard people interviewed outside the Reform conference, like Joe went along to try and take the piss out of them. The average Reform voter is way more based than the Reform Party itself. They know the score, these people, and as people are just so desperate to get something. And I just think the powers that be know that, and they can give them this watered down Trump. They can give them this watered-down Farage. I mean, just listen to Farage now compared to Farage 10 years ago in the EU Parliament, calling out NATO, calling out George Soros, calling out the North London commentariat. I mean, he's so neutered compared to the man he even was 10 years ago.
Well, that's probably because he's getting closer to power. And you can see that there is a mass appeal, and we've pulled people in their party up on this. We get great access and interview Ben Habib on a regular basis, but Ben is no longer part of Reform. So we're talking to area people within their comms team. And you're absolutely right, David, when you say that their base is far more based.
Mm-hmm.
And they really want to talk about mass deportations. There was an interview Farage did with Steve Edgington where he said he's not interested in speaking about this subject right now. And many within Reform will say, well, he's keeping his powder dry. But that's precisely what the Tories did as they moved into the centre ground. So at some stage, he's going to have to put his cards on the table. And I think Trump will have the deportations. Now, the HB1, just one thing quickly. Yeah. Colin mentioned the visas. Now, They're going to 65,000 people on a skilled occupations list basis. We've seen 21 million or so come over the border under the Biden regime. So you're talking about 65,000 people that have got healthcare checks, that have got money, that have got clean criminal records. Now, I'm not saying it's what all Americans want to hear, but there's a damn sight of a difference between that type of migrant than someone coming in on a dinghy or over the border illegally.
I think this idea that as you become more popular, your voter base want a certain thing. As you get closer to power, you must soften your approach. I think that's just a fallacy. I think like people say that a lot. They say that about Trump. Trump won in 2016 because he was hardline and nativist.
Yep.
He lost. You could argue about the increase in votes for the Democrats, but we'll not get into that. But then he won this time round because, one, Joe Biden was a complete failure and Kamala Harris was an insane person. But he also was talking more harshly about immigration. And because he's went through all the legal battles, he's went through a lot of lawfare, he didn't have the finances to back himself. And now he's had to get into bed with like the tech bros and other parties that are not great. And he's completely on board. He's backpedaled on his H-1B stance in 2016. Yeah. And Farage, he'll do the same if he gets finances for, which it's not a part, it's a limited company at the moment, from the likes of Musk. He's got Nick Candy, who's backing him, who is a Tory donor, who then celebrated and praised Starmer when he won because it was time for change. And now he's backing Farage because he sees, for those unfamiliar, Nick Candy's a billionaire who is probably responsible for, or partly responsible for the house prices in London because they're just selling off property to foreign buyers.
The Reform Party does have a lot of links with property guys. Mm. If you look at who's behind
them. Tice is property guy.
Tice, yeah. They're all property guys. And I mean, that's why they won't favour mass deportations. If you get rid of 2 million people from the southeast of England, property prices aren't going to go up. So it's... I mean, I understand what you're saying, Marcus, and I think it's a fair point, but I'm just very blackpilled, especially after like the likes of Maloney and Trump. It's just been all these promises and they never do anything. They never fulfill anything. And that's where I just think, you know, like when you look at guys like Steve Law, Zoomer historian, younger guys, they're just saying, look, this is what needs to be done. We either do this or it's curtains. And I think eventually more people will get to that position. I think people are going to be very disappointed with the Trump presidency. I think they already are. All this Elon Musk stuff. He's basically called the entire base racists.
I don't know. I think it's still early days. I get the skepticism though, 100%, and we've pissed off a lot of our reform people by calling them out on the immigration and the deportation status that they've spoken about, because this is number one in people's minds. Let's be honest about it. It's the number of people coming into this country, legally and illegally, of course. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget about legal migration. My God, we're over a million. And this lunacy from Richard Tice about one in, one out, how the fuck are you going to monitor that?
That's exactly right.
That means you're going to have to rescind your passport. If one of us lads want to bugger off to Whoop Whoop out in Australia or off to Thailand for a bit of diving, then you're going to have to relinquish your passport, surely to God.
That's right. That's right. The one in one out is ludicrous because you'd have one Scot leaving and one Nigerian. So if a million Brits go, sorry, and a million Nigerians come in, he's fine with that because immigration's net zero. And I think again, that everyone is just so terrified of doing anything. And that exists on the left of politics as well. And anyone who is a disruptor, I mean, say what you like about Corbyn. Corbyn was a disruptor. Corbyn was a threat to the system. And the system screwed Jeremy Corbyn over. They will not accept anybody on the left. They will not accept anybody on the right who causes any problems. And it's this where you've just got this dull managerial nature of how Western countries are run. There's no radicals. There's nobody having genuine, honest debate anymore.
Well, there are certain people. I don't want to go on, let the other other gents have a chat on this, but what Orban's doing in Hungary, and to a large extent what they're doing in Poland, is securing their borders, and they are securing it in the hardest way possible. Orban's fighting the European Union at the moment in the courts, but as I was saying to Colin on our stream, he's paying them $800 million in fines, but that money's still being held as they challenge it in court. We're paying $8 billion year in, year out, and that's not including the money we're losing from the Treasury for all the hotels that are logged down.
Clearly, out of all the European leaders, Viktor Orban is the best. But my argument is that's nowhere near good enough. And Hungary is still a member of the EU. Hungary's still a member of NATO. Hungary is still influenced by these globalist forces. And if he was to really be radical, it would involve real radical stuff. But I mean, I agree. Orban does put Hungary first. He is, and look at what they do to him. I mean, that's the other problem you've got as well, is what we want, what I would want. I mean, the chances are you'd probably get assassinated if you were to get into power and start pushing these things.
I think we should be more like Pakistan, where they deported 2 million people in a year.
That's right.
Let's do that. Let's be like Pakistan.
Well, we've got enough of the leadership here.
I bring back Hamza.
Hamza!
That is a ridiculous idea, but I like it. We could use their own ideas against them. But, I mean, it is... I take the point from David that there is a lot of disappointment and disillusionment. But I also think it's true that... a lot of voters just don't care until it affects them directly. And, then they can kid themselves about that as well. There's this phenomenon, I'm sure all of you will have experienced it, where you're trying to convey this gravity of the situation to someone, and they just sort of make some fucking stupid joke about it. And it's like, they don't quite get it, that this is real. Like, this is our country. Once it's gone, it's gone.
as you tweeted out the other day, Colin, about boomers, and I've said this, the boomer is not an age. The boomer mentality is a state of mind. And it is a state of mind that affects so many people now, which is, well, I've got my house, I've got my job, and I'm just going to get on with it. There is literally no passion. You know, and the thing is, I was brought up in politics in the 80s, 90s, there was passion in politics. There was real drive, whether it was on the right, on the left, or nationalism. Now it's this apathy that exists, and a lot of it just comes down to, oh well, I can still go my holidays, or my house is worth a couple of hundred grand. You know, it's just, how is it you can shake the masses, or even a more influential people, out of that slump?
I really don't know. I mean, I think that's the huge question, isn't it?
I think it's when they get faced with it. See, when it starts to directly cause them problems, that's when they'll start going, wait a minute, and then they'll want it to change, and then we just have to hope it's not too late by that point.
And the thing is, the situation is clearly changing very fast. I mean, as I said, bloody Tillicutri. Of all places, you know... And that's very, because a lot of people won't know this, it's a very rural town. I mean, I think it's basically a village. And for that place to be, like, you know, diverse, it was a real head fuck for me. I was really quite astonished. But
it's everywhere. It's during COVID. It's if they carpet bombed Scotland by Africans. And then they've started funding like all these wee towns you visit now. The government have clearly gave them money to set up some Caribbean supermarket, and then they've also gave them money to set up some like reggae food place. And you're like, and on the windows it says like proudly importing all our produce from Africa, and you're like, what? Why am I seeing this? And as you say, Tillicutri. Why am I seeing this in Alawa? Like, it's everywhere.
And the thing is that Scotland was never, I mean, I guess England was never like that either. The English were just, you know, sort of ordinary people. They didn't care about getting food from an incredible range of countries or whatever. It was just you know, normal life. But that's how the Scots were until very recently. I mean, they didn't aspire to being cosmopolitan and multicultural. That's a new thing in the last, I don't know, 20 years, I guess. But when I think of the people, like the old people that I knew when I was small, when they, like in the 80s, this would have been completely unthinkable to them and also completely undesirable to them. It's alien, really. It just wouldn't have occurred to them that this would be good.
It's not good. That's the whole thing about the ESG, DEI. The whole thing about diversity is they want less of what you are, less of who you are, less of your culture, less of your traditions, your music whatsoever. And that amazes me about the SNP, is that they're happy to turn on their own traditions. I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, there were people within the SNP calling Robert Burns a sex pest.
So they were... I mean, in fairness, he was. Like, come on. Burns was a bit of a sex pest, let's be honest.
Well, it was the...
Back in those days.
I know.
But they wanted to write off Robbie Burns. Uh-huh. You know, our bard, our creator of song and music, yeah, and mirth and merriment. They wanted to take him out altogether, and this is the SNP. But they won't stop at anything. That's the whole redaction that we can see. But until it's on your doorstep, as Count was saying, you're not going to actually be confronted with it. Anybody that's lived in London or Coventry or Birmingham, worked in these places, you will be confronted with it. But people are starting to see it now. And I think with that, rightly or wrongly, you're going to see the rise in parties like Reform.
Yeah, I mean, we had John Waters on, the Irish journalist, and we kind of came up with a very good explanation of why Scotland, the Republic of Ireland, are so supportive of this in general, is that a lot of people who are in positions of power now, or they've got a bit of money, let's be brutally blunt about it, 60 years ago they'd have been working down a mine, or they'd have been working in a factory, whereas now they've got a better job, they've got a better house, and the regime agenda is one of being open, inclusive and diverse. So the regime has served them well, so they will not want to go against the regime. And I remember that vividly when I was down at the protest against the Erskine Hotel being used for illegals. And someone put, and it always stuck out for me, put, I was brought up in Erskine and now I live in Glasgow, and these people just don't represent me. And I looked up his Twitter, like the guy worked for some financial services firm. So he'd obviously bettered himself and he'd moved to Glasgow, and It is an innate snobbery that people develop, and a lot of it comes from a position of snobbery. Well, it's the plebs who don't support multiculturalism. We are diverse. We enjoy the food. We enjoy the culture, etc., etc.
This is the hick lib phenomenon. That's what TRS used to call it, where somebody would come from a, you know, humble background or whatever, but they would go to college or something, and basically liberalism would become their ticket out of the trailer park. And so it would be the thing that they held on to dearly, because they've got so much to lose by, you know, if they say the wrong thing. But it's their self-image as well. It's not just what they're saying, it's how they see themselves. They're better than their racist uncle, mm-hmm, because they're progressive.
and we saw that during the disorder this summer, the snobbery against these people. When I was pointing out, look, these people are living in what have been turned into shitholes. They don't have the jobs, they don't have the industry. I mean, what else are they meant to do? Like, and it was the snobbery that was shown against these people, when in fact these were like the sort of the last of the natives. And that was all they could do, you know, was get out and take to the streets. And there was that snobbery. Well, if these people want to affect change, they can do it at the ballot box. All right, yeah, like that's worked over the last 20 years.
Well, just look at the term gammon, for example. You know, that exists. I mean, I know that they would claim it. Well, it also applies to upper class, you know, port drinkers or something. But it really means, and everyone knows what it really means. It's a slur against the working class.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. All of this is so inverted. Again, I'm old enough to remember when the left were pro, you know, they were the friends of the working class, and that has completely changed in this century, really, in the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm. And look at the reaction to it, the way they mobilized in the streets and they all came out and stopped it when it kind of petered out by that point. It does betray, like, the UK, we are very different from other countries, and the class system is real. You know, it does exist in other countries, but the class system is it has this power here. And it is, if you do what the government tells you, if you take your vaccines, if you support multiculturalism, then you are part of that ruling class cadre. And you'll get your job working in the public sector, or you'll get your job working for the NGO, and you'll get your six figures. And that's why so many people just go along with it.
It's also that it means you're a good person. I mean, it's not just about money or employment. It's, you know, you're a good person, mm-hmm. as opposed to an evil, ignorant fool. I mean, there's a moral dimension to this as well. This is how they see it, I think. You know, I'm thinking about some young woman, like some 24-year-old who's absolutely obsessive about liberalism, refugees welcome, and all that. She's not just doing that for employment prospects. She's doing it because this is her notion of being a good person. She's not her racist uncle, that kind of thing. I think that's also a huge part of this.
It goes to the point of absurdity. Like, remember the stabbing in Glasgow in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
There's housing mm-hmm. a lot of migrants.
Yeah, the reception worker, yeah.
Aye, and his complaint was that the people next door were a bit too noisy and he was fed up eating macaroni or something like that. So he went on a stabbing spree. And the response from the people you're just describing was not, oof, maybe these people are different. Maybe we should reevaluate this and look at it logically. The response to that was, we should give the refugees more. They need more funding. We need to give them a diverse meals when they're staying in these hotels at their taxpayer expense. And it's like, how, if I eat macaroni three times, like three nights in a row, I don't get the urge to go and stab people in the local area. That's a difference that we can't get over. More money's not going to fix that. Different moves on the table wasn't going to fix it.
To be fair, stabbing Glasgow, you know, it's not exactly that. I remember I had to come out and clutch, like, online, because it was like, machete attack caught in broad daylight in Glasgow, and everyone was like, oh, that'll be those doctors and engineers, and I had to come in and go, no, that might not actually be us. And it turned out it was two white guys versus another white guy in the middle of the street.
Right, I'll give you that one then. I'll give you that. I'll eat that one.
I love my country.
But that's our culture. He's appropriating our culture by stabby macaroni rampage.
Stabby macaroni rampage. Fucking hell.
Yeah. It's funny because, as well, when you meet people like I was out and a lot during the COVID era, a lot of anti-lockdown protests, and people who are self-employed or people who have their own business, etc., they are more prepared to speak out. They are more prepared to do these things. But I mean, if you meet someone and they say, well, I work for the local council, I mean, 99 times out of 100, you know exactly what they're going to be like. Or if they work in a management position at the NHS, and there's just this huge payroll vote that exists in Britain, especially in Scotland. That very, very public sector vote. And I don't know how you break that, unless, you know, they were to all lose their jobs tomorrow and had to go and sing for their supper.
Well, eventually you run out of money for those jobs. Eventually you don't have enough in tax revenue and tax yields for those jobs. And you're seeing it already in proposed cuts right across the board in every council in Scotland. And just to touch on that COVID era that you were talking about, I wasn't surprised, to be honest with you, in the response with the Scottish people, how absolutely kowtowed they were in wearing their masks and standing outside in the pissing rain, talking to granny through the window and driving around in their cars on their own wearing masks. They were absolutely mentally fucked. But I wasn't surprised because I'd met them during the election campaigns. I tried to speak to them. You tried to engage with them. And you're banging your head against the brick wall. So if that's an indicator of where we're at as a nation, and I think that's the COVID era was pretty good reflection or a barometer as to where we were, where we are. The future's not looking too rosy.
Yeah, I mean that's where again I'm pretty black-pilled on this, and I don't believe in democracy anymore. Whether we like it or not, 80% of your population are just sheep. And they will do what they're told. And I know that's a controversial thing to say, but I mean, if we were in charge of the media, you know, we'd have them doing slightly different things and thinking in a completely different way. That, you know, this notion that the masses can come up with the right decisions. I know that's a controversial thing to say, but I think when you live in a mass media age, it doesn't work. And I mean, you're right about the money situation, the printing. I mean, I just think the only solution to all of this is some form of revolution where you have basically a junta takes control of this country and runs it in the interests of its own people. Unless that was to happen, it'll just be this managed decline. And we will not get the answers from democracy, unfortunately. I don't know how people feel about that.
Does anyone have anything to say about that?
I don't fucking like democracy. I don't like it.
I was wondering, because you used to be very... you had that sort of faith in ordinary people, I think.
Yeah, well, the rules changed, so did I.
Again, after COVID, it's just like that. It changed my thinking in so many ways, and that's one of the big ones. That okay, ordinary people they simply do whatever they're told, and they believe whatever they're told to believe, and that means that debating them is, in many cases, completely futile. Yeah, the populist delusion, exactly. As David says, as much as that's a bummer, it also simplifies the situation in a way, because it means okay, we don't need to persuade the general public. They're going to keep just chanting the same stuff until it becomes fashionable to chant something else, and then they'll just switch, like the NPC meme. So it's not them they are not the problem, really. They are not the thing that needs to be tackled and altered or persuaded or whatever.
You could just do it bit by bit, where you could like change Black Doctor Who to White Doctor Who again. You could then take away the black girlfriend of Spider-Man, put the ginger one back. Yes.
Yeah, people would be relieved. Actually, on the matter of Doctor Who, since this is the Scottish banquet, I should say.
We've got a Scottish doctor, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. He's as Scottish as anyone on this panel. And his name's in QT Gatwa. I can never remember. I think he grew up in Edinburgh, but I can't. It's like, so what? I mean, what difference does it fucking make? It could be from Aberdeen.
That makes him even less Scottish, if you ask me.
Colin, have you actually watched this? Have you actually watched this stuff?
I have watched two episodes.
Fuck.
I don't know. There was some strategic reason for doing so, but I think I had to, in order to write about the finale, I had to watch the fucking finale. So I watched as little of it as possible while writing about it. So, I mean, it really is just sheer poison. And the next season, so the thing that was, somehow this reminded me of it, this first season was broadcast this year. It's him and he's this gay black guy, but the companion was a white blonde girl, And, well, in the next season, it's going to be a Pakistani girl. So neither of the two leads is going to be white. I mean, the show is already getting absolutely abysmal ratings. So once that, I mean, once there's not a pretty blonde, I think it's just absolutely fucked. It's just totally fucked. But I've forgotten what it was that linked with something that someone just said, and I've already forgotten, so sorry. But I did manage to get a Doctor Who reference in, so I apologize to everyone for that.
It's not millennial without a Doctor Who reference or two, or five, or 11.
But the thing is, I don't say it because I like it. I mean, it's like watching a slow motion car crash. It's just incredible how bad a program it is now. But obviously, none of you have watched it, so I don't blame you at all.
I used to love Doctor Who when I was growing up. John Pertwee, Sylvester McCoy, I thought it was brilliant. But it's unwatchable now. Nearly everything is unwatchable. And I do this on my show sometimes. I will go through any program, any film in the last 30 years and show you that there's an agenda. And well, we know what the agenda is, but the thing is, at least when subtle.
David, what do you think? This is a picture from the second season that's going to be broadcast next year. So what would you say the agenda is here?
Well, I don't know if it gets any more blatant than that. A man in a dress and a Pakistani woman smiling at him with a big smiley front teeth.
Yeah.
It's thing is, at least when it was subtle, you could kind of enjoy it. Whereas now there isn't any originality to it. At least the subversion used to be subversive.
Yeah.
Now it's just blatant.
Exactly. It's just right out in the open. It's like the whole thing. There is nothing but the subversion.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, it's tedious, it's boring, but also sort of offense, like hollow, like there's nothing but this.
There's no skill to it. There's no subtlety to it. Like I was breaking down Police Academy the other week and just how subversive Police Academy actually was.
That's so interesting, because I've actually mentioned Police Academy on Millennial, because I happened to watch clips of it about a month ago, and I was shocked, because I used to, you know, we used to rent that one out a lot, and all of them, I think all six of them. And, you know, it was hilarious to an 8-year-old boy back then. It was funny. But watching it now, it was shocking. Like,
Well, you have Steve Guttenberg playing Mahoney as the lead role. You have, what's her name? The blonde haired woman who was the good looking one. What was her name?
Her name Karen Black.
What was her name? The
Sex and the City chick.
No, that was Kim Cattrall. She was in all of them, and she's the not Kim Cattrall. What was her name? Oh, that's going to annoy me. She was the attractive one, but then she was also
Leslie Easterbrook,
single woman. Yeah, that was it. What was the character she played? It wasn't Kim Cattrall. She was in all of them.
Callahan.
That's it. Callahan. So Callahan was sexually promiscuous. Lived on her own, you know, went with all the men. Then you had, who were the bad guys? The two white guys that get the skinhead. Who are the good people? What's his name? Hightower.
Hooks, yeah, Bubba. Yeah.
You know, they're the great people. And then the old patriarchal male is an idiot who runs the police academy. You need these young people from all sorts of ethnic minority backgrounds. Bobcat Goldthwait, you know, that Paul Maslansky, he was the director of it. Very, very subversive, pushing an agenda even back then in the '80s.
Yeah, yeah, it's scary when you realize it was there. It was in the things you watched as an innocent child. It was there, and it was being, you know, filtered into your life and into your worldview. So there's at least one scene in that first film where Gutenberg schools a white guy for being racist.
That's right.
against Hightower, whose name, the actor's name, is literally Bubba, incidentally. But, you know, it's there. It's very interesting. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, on the one hand, it's kind of like a killjoy thing to do, to analyze this stuff. But it's also genuinely interesting, I think, because it's like decoding this stuff.
All of it. Every single show, every single... And that's... People sometimes say, well, how did this all happen? Well, it's been... The seeds have been sown for decades to accept a situation like this. I wasn't... Someone else put a very good thread up, I can't remember, on Twitter, and it was like, genius black guys in films. Like, there was a big thread on it. Like, the guy on Die Hard and in Terminator... When in the reality, that wasn't always reflected. You know, there was a lot of that.
Yeah. Any hospital program or the brain surgeon or they're running the hospital. I noticed my wife doesn't like watching things with me anymore because I'm like, fucking that. But you ever heard the TV series You? It's on Netflix.
No.
It's about some, serial killer called Joe Goldberg. In the first season, is actually pretty decent. Like, they kind of hook you in, but see season two, it's just subversion everywhere. Like, it's mask off. There's even one of the characters is a tranny, and they're just, like, everyone just kisses their feet. Like, everything they say is, like, fucking marvellous. And you're like, they get you hooked in the first season, then they just... overdose you with subversion the rest of the seasons. So we stopped watching after that because I'm like, no, I'm not watching some tranny get his dick sucked for three seasons. Thank you very much.
You and figures for this stuff is dying on its ass. You know, that there's such a massive market for people from our side of the tracks to produce our own stuff. You know, that the tech's getting so user-friendly now that we could make our own sci-fi series. And I say that in all honesty because there's such a void. I'm sure Colin could make a fantastic series from his political bent.
Well, I mean, this is where, again, Marcus, I kind of have to disagree. It doesn't matter if it loses money. The agenda is far more important. And... they will be prepared to lose billions if it gets the agenda that's
required. No one's watching.
It doesn't matter. It is filtering into the wider society. And look, take Joker 2, for example. And again, I wasn't the only one to break this out. Joker 2 was about the first Joker. The guy became a hero of, like, incels, the alt-right, whatever. They ended up killing him because of who he was. And they're prepared to lose fortunes because the wider agenda is more important than making money.
Oh, yeah. Someone will bail it out. But look at the election results all across Europe, David. Right? Look at the election results in the United States. We're an outlier now in the UK.
That's true.
And that's sadly and sickeningly the way we're going. Even look at the results in Argentina. Mm-hmm. So you're right when you say that this is the agenda, blah, 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 of course, but it's in a vacuum. Nobody gives a fuck for this stuff. The Americans rejected the trans ideology stuff when Trump would get up and do his bit, his comedy piece, and roast them, do his bit about the woman getting windburn as this tranny flew by in the swimming pool. You know, it was a great little skit. People have had enough of it. Now they can...
Won the vote by 2 million votes, though. You know, 75 million people did vote for Kamala, so, you know, there's still a strong...
Well, he won the House, he won the Senate, he won all those key swing states, regardless of what they threw at him, the court cases. You know, you can say this, that, and the next thing. You might well have been a Kamala Harris fan, I don't know. But, you know, they were clear in the results, and they were clear in the results throughout Europe as well. So this stuff's being rejected en masse.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I agree, it is. But what my argument is that the sort of powers that be recognise that and they are just shifting gears to suit that perspective.
They're pissing in the wind. It's going nowhere.
But they are just going to try and then contain that anger.
Well, look at this. See, I agree with what both of you are saying. But look at this reaction to the H-1B thing. Because that suggests to me that MAGA, and again, it's a shame that we have to talk about America so much, because obviously we've got our own perspectives, but I think America is as good an indicator as anything. Because the same thing, I think, is happening over here anyway. The reaction from the MAGA crowd to this H-1B thing has been outrage. Yeah, whereas a few years ago, they would have been, okay. And Trump has now echoed Elon Musk's position on this, by the way. So the MAGA crowd should, in theory, be siding with that and saying, yeah, okay, let's bring in these high IQ Indians. And instead, they're not. So I think that herd immunity is correct about this, that people are really pissed off. Yeah. And they're only going to get more pissed off. So what David was saying is they're going to shift back to the police academy mode, where it's more subtle. They're still doing it, but it's more subtle because they don't want to piss people off. But it's too late. I think it's just too late now. Because everyone, I think there is we're perhaps approaching a threshold point where people are just too aware of the existential danger. Now, obviously not in Scotland yet, but pretty much everywhere else. I mean, again, look at all these parties around, you know, Germany, Denmark, Austria, yeah. Italy, even France, Sweden, and America. There's something, I don't want to use the term vibe shift, but clearly something is changing. Something is, I mean, people are just a hell of a lot more switched on to all of this than they were, you know, in 2016, for example. Much more. And it could be a generational thing. There's something I was going to bring into this was the, you know, I offended people today on Twitter by saying something about boomers. And what I was doing was parodying something that Scott Adams once said about black people. And I said, just get the hell away from boomers. It was a joke. But I think a lot of people didn't realize what I was doing. So they thought I meant it literally. I don't want to hate on boomers, but it's clearly true that they are more detached from the, you know, realities than of everyday life, for what it is to be a working person, a young person. So they don't get it. And so what I was going to ask all of you was, how do you think that's going to develop? I mean, do you think that this is now a sort of like the cat's out of the bag? Because I think it is. I don't really see how any of this can be reversed now. And I think that as the boomers are replaced by, you know, millennials, Gen X, younger people becoming voters, Gen Z, I really think it's only going to go one way. Any of you want to talk about that?
I don't know. I'm trying to stay white-pilled on it. I don't think that there's, like, doom and gloom on the horizon. Like, I mean, it's possible, but I
don't. No, I'm fairly white pilled about it as well. That's my point.
I'd say the guilt that the boomers have, and also they've had to convince themselves that all the wars were necessary, it was worth it. So I think all that's going to die away. The white guilt stuff isn't working anymore. I think people are becoming more kind of nativist or ethno-nationalist, if you want. And they're kind of happy to kind of talk about it more openly. So I do think when the boomers aren't a massive voter base, you will see a kind of a political shift. But that's all under the assumption that we still remain a kind of majority voting bloc, which is... You don't know what way that's going to go, but I have seen a positive shift, and even like the re-migration stuff, Steve Laws and the likes are doing pretty good work just popularising that. I know Europe as a whole, there's a lot of conversations happening in the kind of back channels with all these like hardcore kind of re-migration activists kind of working together to make that the next the next thing on the agenda. So I think if people keep remaining active, networking and moving the conversation, I think it could be very white-pilling. But demographics is destiny at the end of the day, so it depends on
I think the only way we will see this change is if the imports go, the attack, if they go on the attack. And you've actually saw that in America very starkly, where you had the university students who were foreign and maybe young all became excessively anti-Zionist. And actually, if you're being honest, started to, you know, veer into really questioning the power structure. And that is the biggest risk for the power structure, is that the imports turn on them. And that's when I think you will have opportunities to say that. Like, what's going to happen? I always talk about the monarchy as a litmus test. What's going to happen to, like, say, Prince William or Prince William's son when London is 80% non-white? You know, where's the support going to come from? You know, they're going to see this white guy living in a huge house in central London. They're going to want to take it. So there is going to approach a time where the British establishment will be left with, well, what do we do here? And that's not to say that they may panic. So this might shift very, very, very quickly. And that's right, again, the Muslim bloc vote, once that starts kicking in, that's going to be huge. You're talking about seats now going to blatantly Islamist political parties. How are the establishment going to react at that point? And these people are blatantly anti-Zionist as well. So I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll get a sense whether there is a possibility of saving things. But something cataclysmic will need to happen, or else it's just a slow, steady decline.
I just chime in and say, well, the boomers aren't really responsible for any of the troubles that we're facing now. They didn't vote for this. They didn't really want this. It's probably more the Gen Xers, because the Gen Xers are off the edge of the Boris Johnsons, maybe a push the Keir Starmers, the Macrons, the Trudeaus, the Justin Ardern's, these placed World Economic Forum puppets. Although it is difficult with Ardern to know how old she is in human years. Very difficult. That's meth for you. But, you know, I think the Xers, which I am, the Gen Xers, have got a lot of the blame to shoulder. Whereas the boomers, they weren't interested in any of this stuff. And even if they were right-wing, left-wing, they were patriotic.
It's true.
So, you know, all those houses you'd see in the wee mining villages and communities in Scotland, they may well have a picture of the Queen up there, as was. And then obviously they were betrayed during the 80s, the mining communities, particularly across the UK. So the boomers didn't really want any of this, the social changes that we're seeing now. They're very traditional people, the ones I know, and they're probably a larger cohort of Brexiteers and patriots. Whereas, the younger ones, they've gone to fuck. They've voted for these liberal, illiberal policies and parties.
I think it is an excellent point, and it is true they were anti-immigration, they were anti the social thing, but I think the criticism people like myself would have and others is, though, that they kind of still believed that the system would work for them. And okay. I mean, maybe again it's easy now to mock them, but I mean, people thought that voting to leave the EU was going to shut the borders. People thought that bringing in Johnson in 2019. And I think that the boomer generation, they also represented a very high trust demographic as well. And yeah, I mean, I think it is a fair point, but it has happened on their watch. But I mean, again, I don't blame them as individuals. These are people who have been brainwashed, you know, from birth. Mm. Anybody born after 1945 has been programmed by the mass media, by, you know, the cultural shifts.
It's the kind of colourblind mindset is, I think, what we're talking about. I think what you mentioned at the very start, David, about it's not necessarily just a generational thing. It's a kind of mindset and a belief where it is that we can sit around the fire and do kumbaya. You even see them at times on Twitter where we've had like 1.2 million in 1 year and they're still talking about integration. And you're like,
or they'll say, imagine Diane Abbott. Imagine Diane Abbott was Home Secretary. If Diane Abbott had been Home Secretary, I guarantee you immigration would have been less because she wouldn't have got away with it.
All right. I thought you meant you couldn't count. We've imported 5 million when it's actually 300 people.
50 million. No, but that's, I mean, I that's the cope. Oh, I mean, imagine if Corbyn had won, what the immigration would have been like. All right. Okay.
Aye. And it's basically the whole, I'm not a racist. That kind of defence they go into where you can't have a productive conversation. Any chat about immigration is, it's instantly outlined with guilt. Where they feel like they need to justify their position somehow, instead of just going, no, fuck it, it's wrong. Let's send them back, clear them out. That's I think what's missing in the kind of older generation. Because when they did grow up, like they just had the Indian down the road. I even remember in the '90s growing up, where we had like one corner shop. There was one immigrant and his family, and you're like, he's nice enough. But then when you get complete towns and cities.
It wasn't an issue. You had Ian Wright on the England team. It wasn't an issue. Linford Christie winning. I talk about that a lot. Linford Christie winning Barcelona 92. Like, I don't remember everybody being angry about it. You know, people were like, oh, this is quite good. Britain's winning. Whereas now, you know, it would be a much bigger issue because of the scale in which it's been done.
It's basically that the thinking hasn't evolved. So as the problems get worse, built, it's not just one corner shop, it's full towns and cities being reduced to a minority. And it's still the same arguments they would make then as, oh, as long as they integrate. See, when I was growing up, I knew this nice Indian man and his family. You're like, we're beyond that. That's not even a topic of conversation anymore. That one guy you knew when you were growing up.
Like, yeah, I mean, they're talking about something from 50 years ago. That's a long time. Like, since they were in the school classroom and there was the one lone brown boy, I think this is for a lot of them, this is a sort of archetype, a sort of image in their head that's what they think of when they think of immigrants and diversity, mass immigration. They think of, oh yeah, he was so alone, and the other kids sometimes were nasty to him. They called him names. And they don't realise in many, many schools around Britain, not just in the inner cities, all over the country now, it's the other way around. It's like one white boy in a class.
But they were raised, again, first generation raised by the television, raised with Holocaust guilt. I mean, that was really pushed down their throats, 60s, 70s and 80s. Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, Mandela. I mean, the level of propaganda that was bombarded about these people, it would have been hard to be against that.
Well, remember, they were raised on television that had two channels.
That's true.
Now, you look at the multimedia scope, and it's endless. Any issue you want to investigate into and go and do a deep dive on, you can do it. You can go and get it and get access to it. The boomers didn't have any of that. They were just given BBC One, BBC Two, then along came STV in Scotland. You know, Channel 4 was a revelation when it came in the 80s. And I think that's where you could see the start of this ESGDI bullshit through Channel 4. And I still stick up for them because these are people that paid their way and patriotically did not want a country like the one we've got. Look, they would have gone down to the local Indian for a takeaway. Mm-hmm. But that's probably about as diverse as they would have wanted it to get. And many of them, I know a lot of boomers, and probably not a single one of them wants to see the direction that Scotland's going in. Certainly they're not voting SNP. They're probably all Brexiteers as well, to be honest. And I think they feel really cheated, hurt and alone, and full of despair. They just shake their heads when they look around at Scotland as it is just now, and they haven't seen anything yet. That's the sick joke. They haven't seen anything yet because the demographics in this country are changing apace.
Oh, every single, like every year when I come, I visit once a year, and every fucking time there's a noticeable change. I mean, it's unbelievable, as I said earlier. But I think one thing that doesn't get acknowledged enough, and people are saying it in the chat, and I think this is a very true and important point, is that, you know, because we rag on the boomers a lot, and I don't even know how. I'm not actually convinced that this generational way of looking at things is that it's only useful in the broadest thing, like in the broadest sense, to characterize the tone, the mood of a certain age group. But there's no, like, if there's one bad boomer who really did, you know, you obviously can't say that that's representative of his whole generation. That'd be fucking ridiculous to say that. So there's a limit to how useful it is. But one other thing that's said that isn't acknowledged enough, I think, is because we're immersed in this online sphere where everything gets mixed up together. And the thing is that the American baby boomer is a very different animal from the European baby boomer and the British one. And so I think it's not exactly fair to lump them all together because they had a very different experience. I mean, you know, our parents, they had to deal with a lot of shit in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. The joblessness, the unemployment, the 3-day week, all of this stuff that we haven't lived through. They did have to work bloody hard, and they did work hard. I mean, I think of my own parents. Yeah. Meantime, in America, they didn't really have this hardship. They definitely didn't have that sense of a country, because obviously Britain was in decline throughout, like steep decline as a world power, as an empire, as a country, as an industrial center, throughout all of those decades. Whereas the same was certainly not true of America, mm-hmm. at least not in general. So
they had to bring in desegregation by force. You know, soldiers, National Guard turned up with guns to ensure desegregation took place. And the people, by and large, were not supportive of a lot of the liberal policies that came in. I do, again, believe the biggest thing of all has been house price growth. The money that people have in house prices, that has given people an illusion of wealth and comfort. And it has been very specific to that generation. People who bought their houses in the 80s, they bought their council house here, or in the 80s or 90s or 2000s, even before that. They have been taken from what would have been just a working class person or somebody working in a manual job to someone who is now a property owner and wealth. And that is why I think that generation has... They have been angry, but they've not been angry enough.
Aye.
Whereas,
sorry to cut across you, but even the pensions that they're offered compared to now,
final salary pensions,
they've got all these carrots at the end of the stick, whereas the generations after them don't really have many carrots to look at. And even see that with some of the mindset. Again, this isn't all boomers. I know some people are getting annoyed, but it's. You hear them at times going, well, see if you just didn't subscribe to Netflix, you could maybe save for a house. And they're like, fuck off. Like, you bought your house for 10 grand. And that same house is now worth 150 grand or whatever it is. And you're like, it's just, again, the conversation hasn't evolved. And yes, they were hard workers, all that. But you could work twice as hard today and struggle to get a house. So it's too many carrots at the end of the stick. As you say, they're basically muted because they're comfortable.
But I think it's more to do with the governments that we've had since their time, to be honest with you. And you look at the asset stripping that's gone on in this country. We're seeing it right now with the closure of our steel mills.
True.
We can't produce virgin steel anymore. We're the only nation in the G7 that doesn't have that. We're closing our oil refineries. We're closing our natural gas pipelines. We're fucking over our own country for good.
Yeah.
All to be imported. Now, they didn't vote for any of that. They worked in those industries. So it's the betrayal of the governments that have let those people down. And you can't blame them for wanting to be a little bit aspirational. I'm sure you're not doing that, David. or no chance when you bought your property. Yeah, it was 10 grand. And the house prices have gone just through the roof. We're lucky here in Scotland because they're a fraction of what they are down south, especially in the southeast of England. The London area, just forget about it. You're talking about 13, 14 times your average salary. Yep. Up here in Scotland is about 3 times your average salary. So everything's changed from their day. They're now retired. They now have their money. But I think that Starmer's gone after them big time with the winter fuel bill cuts. And I just think they're very low-hanging fruit. You know, there's plenty of other groups that you could go after. There's lots of money that we could point out to, like the $8 billion we spend a year on the hotels, like the fucking endless money to Ukraine and the gangsters over there that are getting their cash to $11 billion, $12 billion that the Africans are getting to try and stop the sun shining over there. I don't think anybody is blaming the boomers. They're kind of looking at them and saying, well, what are you doing in this? But it's down to your generation now, my generation, to try and fix what we see in front of us.
I wonder why it is that we feel such exasperation with the boomers. I wonder why that is. I think it maybe in our sphere it's because they're our parents and you know, we've tried to get through to them about different things and it hasn't worked. But I think more broadly it's just a sense that they had it easier than... I think.
Well, I mean, as a generation, you know, they think they won the war. You know, like,
yeah,
I mean, they didn't. They were born after the war. Yeah. You know, and they do talk about sacrifice. I mean, if you look at any graph of the stock market or house prices, you know, it has just been that inexorable rise. And the reality is the more comfortable you are financially, the less radical you will be. And, I mean, if you're a conservative, then that's quite a good thing. But if people are financially comfortable, they will not want to upset the apple cart. And that's why a lot of it there has been tepid opposition to what's happened. Whereas young people coming up, they've got no chance of buying a house. They've got no chance of getting a council house. They can't afford to have children. They're fucked, right? And that's why a lot of them won't, you know, go for the whole colorblind meritocracy. They will just go straight to the Homeland Party or PA or that, because it gives them full answers to the problems that they face. And that goes again both ways. Even the Labour Party doesn't offer a proper solution of socialism to people. You know, they're not a socialist party either. And I mean, again, this is quite a radical thing to say, but even my view of the USSR, about the regimes of like Ceausescu, and these people have changed. Whether these countries, there was a lot of bad things happened, they were sovereign, independent countries. You know, Poland during communism was a Catholic conservative country. The birth rate was still high. Now Poland, the birth rate's collapsed. They are opening their borders. Every time I go to Poland, I see that even more. There's Deliveroo, there's Uber Eats. You know, they are sowing the seeds of their own downfall. And again, they've never been wealthier. And that's the price you pay for comfort and wealth. You lose the fight. The West is a bit like a third or fourth generation business, where the idiot great-great-grandson just screws it over. Whereas, you know, your great-granddaddy worked all the hours and created it. That's kind of what we're doing here.
I think it's also the assumption on the part of boomers that they understand the today's world. I think that really pisses people off. That sort of condescending attitude when it's clear that they don't understand it, but they refuse to believe that. You know, when a younger person tells them that, I think that is a huge source of anger for people. Anyway, well, I'll get to some super chats because there have been a few, and one person is quite well. This new 123, I cannot see your. I've looked on Entropy, and there's nothing there for you, I'm afraid. So I don't know what you're. I think you must be doing something wrong, I'm afraid, because it's just not going through. Darby said, I keep hearing libtards banging on about Farage bringing American-style politics to Scotland and Britain. If so, is this totally a net negative? Well, okay, so this is about him as a singular figure rather than a party. I don't know what else would be meant by that, by American-style politics.
Testing. I don't know what the fuck happened there, but I was muted on fucking StreamYard for some reason, and it wasn't me. So I've been talking this whole fucking time, and nobody's heard it.
Oh, no. Oh, fuck. Sorry.
It was a no chance was pure like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm fucking talking. Like, fuck me, man. I mean, I'm being a bit quiet because I was out at the fucking catty last night. So I'm feeling a bit delicate.
You did sound rough when you first joined before we went live. You're like, hello.
Oh, no, I was thinking, I went to the cat house like a fucking gremlin. And I'm feeling a wee bit delicate today.
Mosh pitted out your tits.
No, fuck, didn't do a mosh pit. that's for the journey home outside the Blue Lagoon. That's where, that's where you start smashing people.
I've actually
Blue Lagoon is a chip shop of yours.
Yes, right. It is. And yeah, it used to be terrible, but it's fucking excellent now, man. Yeah. Blue Lagoon's fucking banging.
What do you have? What do you have there, Kate?
Well, do you want to know what I got? I got a half pizza crunch because I'm a fucking a retard, man. Like, oh, but am I like completely fucking packed with Bucky and beer? Do you know what that needs? Yeah. Half a deep fried pizza. I got myself a rolling sausage as well, but when I was trying to like get my keys out of my pocket to like unlock the door, I fucking dropped it in the ground. I was genuinely furious. Oh, man. So yeah, furious about that. But no, I get a half pizza crunch and I get a rolling sausage. That's my steaming at 3 a.m. in Glasgow menu. That's what
do they
I
do good chips?
The chips are mid. Their pizza crunches are fucking banging, though.
Right.
Pizza crunches are good.
It's funny you say the cat house, because as soon as you said it, it rang a bell, and I remember people talking about that a long fucking time ago, like maybe the late 90s.
Oh, Catty's been around since the 90s. It's been around. I think it's only changed owners. Once, I can't remember. I think in the last 8 years, somebody else bought it. Don't quote me on that.
Donald McLeod is the owner. We've had him on the channel a couple of times.
Fuck off, seriously.
Yeah, do you know him?
I've the name's ringing a bell. It's ringing
a
bell.
He's on Talk TV quite a lot.
Fucking, I did not know that. Well, there you go. But what is he? See, because of this whole fucking. Oh, I'm single now. I'm going to go out fucking clubbing again. Oh, where can I go? The Catty. That's where I used to go
are
to.
Are you single, Dan Killer?
I'm single, mate, aye. But then,
have you got kids?
I've got two kids, aye.
Good two. Did you split up with your girlfriend?
My girlfriend? No, wife? My wife.
Your aye, wife? That's aye. A shame.
No, it's not.
Sorry to hear that, man.
Sorry to hear that.
Right, no, don't worry, but it's fine. No, but basically, I went to the Catty going, oh, yeah, here we go. And then I walk in, place is just full of my fucking exes. Like, wall to wall. And I was like, ah, shit. So I've got them all fucking staring at me and giving me growlers. And I'm like, I'm back. I'm back, baby. I'm back.
Is this like a bevy of Glaswegian gothettes?
Yes, it's a rock club.
Are they the ones you were fighting outside the Blue Lagoon?
I wasn't fighting. I punched women outside the Blue Lagoon. I did unironically literally nearly get into a fight in Greg's with a junkie. Like, I'm not joking. Like, fucking over an argument because I refused to give him a fag.
That is a real Scottish banquet.
Yeah, it was the Greg's right next to Central Station. The junkie's actually well known. There's a funny video of him on YouTube as well. And he tried to fight me. And He had his hand in his pocket, and I said to him, like, in the middle of Greg's, it's the most British thing I've ever done, nearly fighting in the middle of Greg's. And then I said, if your hand comes out your pocket, I'm dropping you. And then he pulled out his hand, and it was a can of Coke. He had a can of Coke in his hand, and then he literally went, I'll bounce this right off your fucking head. And I just started laughing, going, why are you pulling out a can of Coke in a fight, mate? And people in the queue were laughing, and then the woman behind the counter went, oh, get fucking it, and like started shouting at him, and he just left, and that was it.
Glasgow's usually well known for very polite homeless guys and junkies where they go, any spare change, mate? You're like, no, they're like, have a great day, pal. You're like, cheers.
I heard one of the most brutal ones for a fucking big issue seller years and years ago. Like, he went, like, big issue, pal. And I pure went, oh, sorry, mate, I've no money. And he pure went, I me neither. And I was actually like, oh, but like, I genuinely didn't have any money.
I tend to give money to the ones that are more honest, where they're like, mate, you got a couple of pounds for a cider? I'm like, right, fair enough, mate, there you go. Instead of like, can I have a few pounds for a sausage roll? You're like, I know you're going to buy drugs and alcohol.
Aye, fucking. There was like junkies that were just famous for being junkies. There's a few of them in Scotland. I remember Hot Wheels. Do you remember Hot Wheels from back in the day? He was a junkie that was in a wheelchair. So everyone just called him Hot Wheels.
And the one I remember was from The Scheme. Was it Marvin?
Marvin, I'm pure happy, could not be happier, happy as Larry. Aye, that fucking, he's had his teeth fixed. He's had like a complete glow up.
Aye, I heard they get them knocked out like 3 weeks later.
Fuck me, man.
Aye, that's the most famous one I know is the one from the, was it BBC that had that, The Scheme?
I think it was the BBC. I think the BBC had the Scheme. You ever heard of Ketamine Kyle from Aberdeen?
These names are fucking ridiculous.
he's just a famous junkie. He's just a famous junkie. You get junkies that are just famous for being junkies.
No, I haven't heard.
No, there was. I'll tell you a story about a famous junkie. Anybody that's for Coke Bridge has probably heard of him. I'll say his name because it doesn't matter. He's dead now. His name's John Paul Finnan. He was called J.P. Finnan from Coke Bridge, right? And there was actually a Facebook group that said, at some point in my life, J.P. Finnan has asked me for fags or money. And the group had like 20,000 likes, which is impressive because Coke Bridge only has a population of about 40,000. And it was like, so, and people were like replying under it with all their stories. He was a cretin. He used to like snatch purses off of like old ladies and all that. The guy was just like a massive piece of shit. Right. And my dad was a firefighter his whole life. Like, that's what he did. And they have like big quarterly meetings and all that, where like the fire service comes out, the ambulance service comes out, the police are there, and they have these big quarterly meetings, mostly about terrorism drills and like all that type of shit. But my dad came home for one, and he pure went, they went like that to me, went, Mark, who's J.P. Finnan? And I went, oh, you don't fucking know J.P. Finnan? He's like the most famous junkie in Coke Bridge. He's a fucking piece of shit. He's a fucking arsehole and all that stuff, man. And then I went, he died. He was found dead in his bed like about a week ago. And my dad went, aye, because at this meeting, the guy that was in charge of the police went up and went, just a little announcement for everyone. John Paul Finnan was found dead in his bed on the 19th of March, and the room started clapping. They started clapping because he was just that much of a massive piece of shit. He'd assaulted ambulance workers. The police all knew him. Everybody knew he was a bit giant piece of shit, and he says that people in the room were clapping because they thought it was brilliant that he was dead.
Aye, they're clapping now until their overtime's cut.
I know exactly. I know that. Clap for the NHS, clap for the dead junkies.
My favourite junkie is the one for the Chuchter junkie, where he's at that fence, he's trying to put his fucking bank card in, and he goes up to him, he's like, that's not a bonk machine, that's a fence.
That's not a bonk machine, mate. That's not a bonk machine.
That's my favourite one.
You seen the junkie that tried to climb the fence into the church, obviously to break in.
I need to get caught.
Aye, and then the guy's pure, what are you doing hanging for there? I don't know. I was just trying to get him, please. And his trousers get caught in the fence, so he's like fucking hanging up there. Man, and he was stuck. That was fucking brilliant.
We're not short of junkies, we'll say that. But the SNP are going to cut them.
See, if you look at the opioid crisis in America, it actually follows the trail of Scots-Irish emigration. Is it called the Appalachian Way? Because people Scotland, Appalachian Trail, are more susceptible to opioids, which is even the same over in America. So the opioid crisis in America, if you look at like the surnames, they're all very Scottish or Scots-Irish, and that's the way it went.
Well, there's that thing about the cliche about the Irish and Scottish alcoholic. You know, it's never an English guy. And you see it on TV, but I think it's actually got some truth to it. The Scots are, and the Irish, obviously, are just more susceptible to addiction. I don't know, but it would
I think the weather plays a big impact on that. I think the weather is just so bad. People can't appreciate just how bad the weather is. I mean, I'm in the west of Scotland, and I mean, it's probably rained here every day for the last 3 weeks. And it's dark, and it's cold, and it's dreich.
I miss that.
Like Frankie Boyle, as much as I don't like him, he said that high-rise flats were so depressing they should have a diving board on top of them. I mean, it's true. You know what? The housing was grim. The weather was just really. I think the weather plays a big impact on it, and it makes them susceptible to drink and drugs.
But to be fair, we can drink anywhere in the world. Well, you still see Scots in Spain, Ibiza, wherever they are, getting pissed. It's a big part of our culture. There's no doubt about it. Going out, hanging out together, drinking, socialising, you know.
That wasn't Scottish culture 60, 70 years ago. You know, Scotland was a very Presbyterian country where, you know, alcoholism was frowned upon. And
extremely enlightened as well. Coffee was seen as the big thing back in the day. Like the coffee shops were like big things, and they were like associated with like intellectuals and stuff like that.
I think coffee's replaced all the pubs. I went to Stirling Uni, and I went up there a couple of weeks ago just to have a look around the place. Jesus Christ, it's been completely filleted. There used to be 8 pubs there at Stirling Uni. Now there's 1. And it's all coffee. It's all Starbucks.
The student ban has a big part to play in this.
And they've got the alcohol tax as well in Scotland, which is just another way of getting money out of people. Because they put the alcohol tax in a few years ago, and they looked at it, and there was a slight decline like the first few months, which I think is completely unrelated to the price. But then they've seen record high alcohol deaths every year after that, and then recently they've revised that. They've looked at it again, going, has this worked, has it not? It's been a massive failure, but they put the unit tax up even more, which just shows you it's not about saving lives, it's about more money, which then does just wreck the pubs. And even when you look at rates and local councils, it's insane. People are paying the same amount in council tax as they are for their rent for businesses.
It's the emasculation of men. I was last night on my show, I was looking at this. Motorola in Bathgate employed 5,000 people at one time. The Hoover factory in Cambus Lang, like 10,000. Singer in Clyde Bank, I think, was like 50,000 people at one point. You know, they were proper jobs. They were manufacturing. There was a nobility working at, like, you're a man now in Scotland. People say, well, what do you do for a living? Like back then, you could have said, well, I'm a welder. I work in the shipyards. I work in a mine. I work in the Motorola factory. Do you know, what do you say now? I'm an office assistant.
I work in a call centre because that's the vast majority of fucking jobs now. And it has been for a while.
You're not going to look someone in the eye and say that. I work in a call centre. I mean, you're going to be embarrassed. You know, there is that dinner conversation aspect, and that's why, you know, it's shite. Men have been removed from doing things that men used to do.
This is even in a kind of bigger scale. If you look at, like, Govan, for example, with the shipyards, that was very much community and family orientated. There was dads working with sons, there was cousins in there, and it was all part of the community. It was the heart of the community. Whereas now when you look at, like, the way they've changed, everything's now just commercialised, everybody's replaceable, they're getting in cheap labour. It's similar to the H-1B debate in America now.
It's also that the older generation can't teach skills to the younger ones. So that, because, I mean, who the fuck is going to use that equivalent? Is a father going to teach his son the skills to work in a call centre? It's obviously ridiculous.
The whole apprenticeship system's gone. Yeah. That was replaced by the university program that Blair brought in the 97-98, when he encouraged every man and his dog to go off to university to learn one of the arts, which ended up being completely useless. And all the trades, the traditional skills that we have, like the even the sparkies, the plasterers, the bricklayers, the carpenters, they were all gone, and people just picked them up as and when. So that's why the need is to bring in all this labour from Eastern Europe in particular.
But what I'm kind of getting at, though, is the companies back in the day, they would be part of the community. The kids would look up to their dad, and they knew they had a place in that business, and they took pride in going in there like my dad did. And the company took care of them. They gave them cushy pensions. They could support a family. Whereas with a kind of over commercialization, it's like the kind of managerialism everyone talks about. What they're doing to all these hearts of the community businesses that David was mentioning, they're doing that at a wider scale to the country. Whereas we are not the heart of the nation anymore. We are replaceable cogs in a machine that we can just import the world and it will still work as it did. Well, there's not the same commitment or history, dedication, and then companies are scratching their head wondering why they can't retain staff anymore, why these skills that we rely on are no longer getting passed down, why these people that dedicated their life to the company are just either retiring early or just not interested.
Companies used to build houses for their workers in this country. Like, I mean,
aye, the co-op.
I know, but loads of them did. There's, if you actually look, there's loads of small holdings. Say there was a factory built, the company would build the workers' cottages. And there was a sense, well, we are a family and we have a relationship. Whereas what they've done is they've now, the government is responsible for providing these low-paid workers with housing. I believe we are witnessing what people would have been like in, like, you know, Rome in the 400s. People just looking back thinking, we used to have fucking Julius Caesar and, you know, Hadrian and people like that. And now we're just full of foreigners and our roads are crumbling and we're getting invaded all the time. I think that's the situation we're in here.
It's like the deliver immigrants, like, all like going, what the fuck? We've given away our country for people with green bags fucking delivering slop.
That's right. Brilliant. Well, that's what the Romans did. The Romans, to be a Roman citizen used to be hard. And then the Romans were like, ah, well, anyone can become a Roman now. And eventually, like, when the Visigoths invaded and the barbarians are like, oh yeah, they're our people. We don't care about this place. We were brought here as slaves. You know, and that's what Enoch Powell said in his speech. That's what Enoch Powell alluded to, and he's been proven correct.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the super chats. I don't want to neglect those. So Darby said, I keep hearing libtards banging on about Farage bringing American-style politics to Scotland and the UK. If so, is this totally a net negative? Does anyone have anything to say about that? Because I don't really know what is meant by American-style politics.
Is that not like the culture war stuff? And kind of instead of voting for the party, you're voting for the personality? Kind of that stuff?
Is
that,
yeah. I think that's what it means, yeah.
I think he's talking about Reform's presidential style with Nigel Farage and his associations with Trump, and the way that Reform package and deliver their stuff is very, very similar to the Trump delivery program. The way that he's communicating as a broadcaster as well, because let's not forget Nigel was on GB News. He was on LBC before that. He was building up his profile. He's been in the jungle. But I don't know. I mean, he's calling Farage a libtard. The fuck does he think of Labour and the SNP then? Oh. I mean, you can look. I'm not saying Farage is perfect by any manner or means. I'm not in Reform, but presently, currently, it's probably the best option that we have over here, and it's a sad reflection of the state of our political scene. There's no doubt about that. To where we maybe were in the 90s or the 80s. But I don't know what solution that people are going to go for. I mean, David, you're talking about a sort of totalitarian regime and go away from democracy, yeah.
Based.
Well, the David, I mean, that's the only, it's Stasi. The, That's the only way you're going to solve this. And
well, good luck with that, mate. Good luck.
Good
luck with Farage, you could say. Like, even look at his kind of rhetoric, like during Brexit. There was a breaking point poster with the scanner. It was very nativist, nationalistic. That's what got Brexit over the line. And then they seen reform. They were looking back at the Brexit days, the Nigel Farage rhetoric of back then, going, yeah, this is what we need as a solution. And now he's talking about not engaging in deportation talks. He's pretty soft on even the illegal immigrants.
There's a reason for it. You know, as someone who was in UKIP and UKIP and has like directly worked with the guy, I can say he is 100% in it for himself.
Yeah.
And he is very, very, very optics cucked, like really fucking optics cucked. But another thing which I know is a really, really huge stickler for him that he's worried about, and I think it's why he's not talking about the immigration or deportation stuff, is he's very, very worried that reform get BNP'd. That's his main concern. Oh, a new party that's a slightly further to the right than we don't like, then basically every stop gets pulled out to completely tank it into the ground.
Well, it's an understandable concern, but I just don't think that would ever happen with reform because of his popularity as a figure. I just don't think the state could do that.
Nick Griffin never came anywhere near as close to the popularity that Farage has. And, you know, Farage caused Brexit and everything as well.
But Farage is really good at networking. If you think about the relationships he's made with Europe as a whole and also the American sphere, let's see if he played his cards right. Like as Wo said, there's no way he could be dethroned like the BNP. He's way beyond that, but he's just he's weak.
I personally feel it's far more sinister with Farage. I think if you read between the lines, the Zionist lobby, which is the Jewish lobby, they want a war with Iran in the Middle East. They want to complete their Greater Israel project, and they're just putting their people into place. And if you look at Nigel Farage's Twitter, Nigel Farage says he's friends with Peter Thiel, who owns Palantir. Nigel Farage was pushing about the hostages in Gaza, etc. Farage never used to talk about stuff like that years ago. He just didn't. Whereas that's where the money is in politics, whether people want to admit it or not. You don't get it from grassroots. You get it from the power structure, which overwhelmingly is Jewish and Zionist. And that's the strings that come attached. And I think Farage is going to be playing a role very soon. I think they want a war with Iran, possibly want a war with China as well. Farage is exceptionally anti-China.
And what will get the young men to sign up than a good nationalist figure running the country? Right. Yeah.
That's right. And no one's going to go and die for Keir Starmer. No one's going to go and die for Kemi Badenoch. But, you know, 800,000 or 900,000 people might sign up for Nigel. And look, again, that might just be nonsense. That might just be, you know, conspiratard theory. But
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the idea of people going to die for Nigel Farage.
I can't see it.
Like some young man in a trench is going to turn around and look like Aragorn and go for Farage.
if you're telling people that, you know, this is the clash of civilizations, we're fighting the terrorists over there so that we can.
He ate the kangaroo balls for us in the jungle. We're going to die for him in the trenches.
But that's
we're going to get blown up by a drone.
That's and you don't need huge armies now. You just need a few hundred thousand people, and clearly there is a lot of talk about war. I mean, I think one thing that Farage would be against would be any war with Russia, which is a positive. As I say, there are positives with Farage. If Nigel Farage was PM tomorrow, I'd be happier than if it was Keir Starmer. But I think the potential negative downfalls of Farage could be very serious. Just like in America, I think that once Trump gets in, there will be major uproar in the Middle East. And
Trump is completely bought and paid for by the tech bros and the Zionist lobby. It's obvious. He's packed his cabinet's going to be Zionist and tech bros that are pro cheap foreign immigration and pro war in the Middle East. But it's not to be the black pillars. I know Dave is always accused of being a black pillar. But it's the reality of the situation. Yes, Farage is better than Starmer.
Well, it's a guess. it's a guess that'll happen.
Well, look at the funding. You need to follow
the last time. The last time that Trump was in power, there weren't any wars. There was nothing like what we've seen with the explosion in the Middle East.
He sowed the seeds for it. He started arming Ukraine. He started sending all the weapons. He assassinated Qasem Soleimani in an act of international murder. And there was no wars on his watch, but he did do a lot of things that then led, you know, they shelved the Middle East peace plan that could have potentially seen a two-state solution and got behind Netanyahu, you know, and that led to the situation on October the 7th. And look, I agree, Trump's intrinsic position is to not be pro-war. And that's why, again, I still think there's a risk Trump could get bumped off. Because if I was a tech bro or a Zionist, I'd rather have J.D. Vance.
Vance is primed for.
J.D. Vance is your golden boy. You know, whereas Trump intrinsically is anti-war, I get that. But he took $100 million from Miriam Adelson. You know, he's visiting the grave of Rabbi Schneerson. This just is not the Trump of 2016. The Trump of 2016 called out Marco Rubio for taking donations from Sheldon Adelson. Now Marco Rubio is the Secretary of State and he's taking $100 million from Miriam Adelson. Maybe the system was just overwhelmed him. You just think, well, I'll just make a deal with the power structure and at least I can get some stuff done. And look, that's fair enough. I would rather people were just honest about it and just say, look, I'm going to shill for Israel, but it means we can deport 2 million Muslims. Fine, but just be honest.
It's basically Dank's position on Tommy Robinson. I like you. I think you've done a lot of good work, but can you just cut the Israel shit? We don't care.
People got mad about me saying that, and then I just kicked off pure going like that. Why do so many British nationalists care about nations that aren't Britain? Why? I don't give a fuck about any other country except my own.
See the criticism we level at Hamza Yousef, where you go, he's clearly very ethnocentric, he's very nepotistic. Then the first thing he does as First Minister, as he starts talking and negotiating with Pakistan about sending our taxpayer money there, bringing people over, you're like, it's the same shit. We just want leaders that are going to put our interest... Correct. We want leaders that are going to put our interests first, and they're not bought and paid for by bad actors that are going to sell us down the garden path and let our young die in foreign wars that are fuck all to do with us.
If you're against foreign influence in politics, you have to be against all foreign influence in politics, whether it's
foreign investment,
it's Zionist donors to support Israel, or it's Qatari money, or even Chinese money, or also Russian money. I mean, you need to end this culture of selling yourself to foreign interests.
Isn't it true that about 60% of the buildings in London are owned by foreigners? Apparently Saudi Arabia, they own fucking shit tons of property.
And Nick Candy, the reformed owner, helps facilitate a lot of that.
Admiralty Arch, one of the most iconic buildings in London, you know, the right next. I mean, they sold that to the Arabs for 20-30% of market value. I think it was the former MI5 headquarters, you know, next to Parliament. That's Arabs that own that. It's disgusting what they've done, you know, the way they've sold. Look at the post office. They've just sold the post office to a Czech guy. You know, it's ridiculous.
I think that's a pretty fair standard. See, if you have a second passport, you should not be able to be involved in politics, donate, own property in the country, because I think your loyalty is questionable. Will that be Israeli, Nigerian, Pakistani? I don't give a fuck. Because you get, there's people in this country that have got an Iranian passport and they're voting in elections in Iran because they can. Because they're interested in the political outcomes of Iran. You're like, why does that exist?
Someone in the live chat is saying, anyone holding dual citizenship should never be allowed any form of influence in government.
True.
Correct.
Yeah. Completely agree. I don't think anyone, I mean, who the fuck could disagree with that?
Well, it's like, I'm not as convinced about the mass deportation argument. I think that's a step along the road. For me, the first thing is, who runs this country? Who runs Britain, as Ted Heath famously said and then lost the election? Is it people who care about this country, or is it foreign interests?
Well, I thought you were really asking.
look at the Arab countries. Like, if you go and work in Dubai or Qatar, like, what's Qatar? 60, 70% foreign workers. The Qataris run the show. You're a guest. And that's what I've always said. If people were to come to this country, they are a guest. When you're a guest, the rules are different. You have to adhere to certain standards. And guess what? You don't get to run the country. And I think that should be the first step of what people should aspire to. And then if people decide they want to mass deport people, well, fine. And as you pointed out, no chance. That's what the Pakistanis have decided. They opened up a Pakistan to the Afghanis. And they've said we don't like them, although they're probably going to go to war quite soon.
All right. Let's move on. And okay, Diesel Runaway said, this stream had more spunk than a haggis in a blender. Thank you, Diesel. Great chat. I like the hangouts. They're old school, but without the shonky headphone issues, lol. Woz, do keep this addition to Millennial. Yes, I think the banquets have gone well. So yes, I will do them each year. Thank you. Conservative said, I know a smart black guy. All right. Stephen said, hold on, let me see. What does Count Dank think of the video posted by Graham Linehan on Jordan Peterson's channel 2 weeks ago called Count Dankula Was Right?
Oh, about the Jews. I did see it. Yeah, they were basically just talking about censorship and comedy and how things have, like, obviously, like, tumbled down to there, where you're getting to the point now where people are just voicing dissatisfaction about the current state of migration in Britain, and now you're getting, like, poor little random single mother Facebook women getting handed, like, 18-month sentences because of some bullshit that they posted on Facebook. It was basically that they were talking about, and I'm basically being described as patient zero for that shit, although arguably what I did was funnier.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like Graham Linehan. I think he's a bad actor.
Yeah, I don't like him either.
I think he's a nice guy. I have had dinner with him. I had dinner with him, and he actually apologised, like, to my face for, like, the shit he
Well, that's admirable. That's fair. Yeah, I respect him for that, but he is very pro-abortion, and he's a shitload of these trannies.
He's still very much, see how, like, a 90s leftist, you know, like your Bill Hicks and your George Carlin types, he's still very much one of them, and his, like, proper huge heyday was when he was on telly and writing all these shows during that era, so of course he's still going to have that mindset, but, you know, it just,
I just think he's
trannies are the beanies behind it, apparently, though.
He's very disingenuous with it, though. Like, I try to have an interaction with him about abortion, and yes, sadly, his other half had issues during pregnancy, and that resulted in termination, which is really sad, but that's not an abortion. That's a medically necessary procedure. That's not like the 3,000-odd children in Scotland that are aborted out of convenience. That's not the same thing. And me trying to raise that point with him, he just basically smeared me and then blocked me. And I'm like, okay, they're not the same thing. If there is an issue in the womb, and I think some of it is bullshit as well. I'm not saying Graham Linehan's example, but see the whole Down syndrome test. That's a guess. Like, it's not guaranteed. Like, they could come back saying,
talking about the Harmony test.
Aye, we think your child has Down syndrome. Do you want to abort it? And you go, no, and your child comes out without Down syndrome and lives a normal life. And again, I'm not pro aborting Down syndrome children. I've got a family member with Down syndrome. They're the happiest people in the planet. There's nothing you could say or do to them. They would just fucking cuddle you. They're just, like, they're brilliant. I just think he has just a shit lib that doesn't like trannies. And,
well, as I said last night, this is a thing. That crowd, the gender criticals, are like this. You know, they're basically still leftists in every way, on every other issue. But they've fallen foul of the consensus on the trans issue. So they're in this very weird sort of no man's land where they don't belong anywhere, really. But they're still lefties, but they're not allowed into the lefty tent anymore.
So, I like your J.K. Rowlands. And yeah. Do you want to hear how naive I am? I thought with this crowd, because they are looking at biology and they're going, well, men can't be women. You're trying to rationalise that. You're right. I thought we could then engage with them. Some I have engaged with and it's worked, but the majority, no. We could go, like, just because Ulu Kemi fucking whatever is born here for a ball hair of length of time and fucks off to America, like, that's not a Brit. That's still an African. I thought we could try and rationalise our arguments using the kind of transgender argument that they're well accustomed to. As I say, some people, very small minority, it's worked with. Others, they're just like, fuck off. I was like, oh, there's a bridge here that can be built.
What's interesting about your point is, so they're actually very closed-minded people. You actually find people who would be considered on the far right, as many of us tonight would, not all of us, of course, are much more open to having discussions and analysing it. Whereas anybody that has that leftist mindset, they're incapable of... I mean, like, the Lawrence Fox-Steve Laws debate was a perfect example of that. He was basically incapable. He says, I want to listen and debate. He's incapable of understanding another point of view. Whereas I think because a lot of us, we have been sent to the depths of the internet and among some of the most, switched on people, we have to have our eyes and ears open to what's going on. Whereas these guys are just, used to having their positions.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is that we exist in their world. They don't exist in ours. So we understand their arguments and their way of thinking just by default, really, because we're immersed in it. Whereas for them, our ideas are quite, very new and puzzling. They're just not used to thinking in the terms that we think in.
I would say Lawrence Fox would probably be more open to Steve Law's ideas if he wasn't balls deep in a half-black woman. He'd probably like, right, fair enough, but he's got that emotional and sexual connection where he's like, no, because that means you'll deport her. And that's not Steve Law's position. I know he's very extreme intentionally to try and push the conversation, but he's got, I think it's like a 9-step plan.
Yeah.
And the majority of the steps, your normal person would go, fair enough. When you get to maybe 7, 8, or 9, people will go, I'm not sure about that. And probably yourself included, David, because I know your missus is Polish. But the majority of the steps, you've went, fair enough, that's fine.
We're talking about the country here, and the mistake people make is they personalise it. Like, clearly there's a long way to get to that. Instead of thinking, well, look, what is more important, my personal situation or the state of my country? And that's what, if everyone is in that situation, well, I've got a relative that's mixed race, or Mr. Atwal that works, we're not talking about it on an individual level. You're talking about it as a nation and as a country.
That was deport foreign criminals, that Twitter account's issue. Right. He's got, like, mixed race grandchildren. So, like, he's hard line in every other way, but he's worried about, as I think you said, David, that was the funniest thing when you were like, what about wee Jamal with his curly hair? And he's fucking went mental, but they over-personalise it, but that was hilarious. I think I clipped that and put it on Twitter, but...
It's like when you're making big decisions, clearly there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. But any company has to make these decisions. If they need to sack 2,000 or 3,000 workers, they'll do it. If they need to relocate their business, they'll do it. Whereas nobody wants to make like really tough decisions that are going to cause problems. And someone's going to have to come in and do that, or else it's game over.
And that change will have to come from a political force. Now, we can all have our opinions on politics and party politics especially. I have got a lot of respect for people who have given up on party politics altogether. I think what you're talking about, David, and probably No Chance as well, is about some sort of totalitarian takeover or a revolution?
It would be. Well, we live in a totalitarian system where dissent isn't tolerated, so it would just be one with our political views rather than theirs.
So how do you enact that change?
Well, you'd have to have a revolution, wouldn't you? You'd have to have a it's either top down or bottom up. I think that may come if the country does start fracturing, if things did turn to shit, the ruling power structure would go to people who would be able to come in and sort the problems out. Now, I'm not saying it's me or anyone else, but that's what history has proven. The threat of, say there is the threat of a communist takeover of this country, or, you know, there is a threat of an Islamic takeover, you know, further down the line, clearly the powers that be will want that dealt with. And they're going to have to go to people that will not necessarily follow the rules of a liberal democracy.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be spelled out. I mean, I think it's very clear. And a lot of people wouldn't like it. I mean, it wouldn't be pleasant. But, you know, change never is, really. All right. And Alt-White said, great chat, Woz. Thank you very much. And then Denise Kelt said the following. There was a BBC show called Ripper Street, set in Victorian England in Whitechapel. All sorts of depravity was featured. The chosen characters were the moral angels. One scene featured a rabbi instructing the bewildered white on the nature of man. This rabbi told the cop that man is a beast that just wanted meat and sex, and that was all. The rabbi was standing over the cop, who was seated like a child. I never found the clip, but I think this is what the chosen are engineering with immigration chaos. I'd have to see it in order to comment on this, but does anyone recognize that, or has anyone seen the program?
I've not. I was googling it as you were talking. It's Rabbi Max Steiner.
It was a very similar scene in the Blitz film that came out recently. I don't know if you saw that scene where the white Englishman is angry.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, that was just cringe.
I just see that as sheer projection. It's similar to the kind of excerpts that were added in Anne Frank's diary about all that masturbating. You're like, why the fuck would a father add that to this story without it being some sexual perversion in their part? Not,
yeah.
Our sickness isn't your sickness. Like, rein it in.
Yeah.
The reality is people in this country are the most anti-racist people. And I don't say that cuckway. In general, white people are, by and large, very open and very welcoming. And like, that's what we've shown. But look at how that's been taken advantage of. Look at how the piss has been drawn out of that. You know, it was this country that ended slavery, got into debt. Obviously, there's a bigger story to that. It was this country that put an end to these things. And because that's really our intrinsic default position, is to be nice and open and welcoming. But look at how that's backfired.
I think that's, again, just a complete... I don't think we are open until the propaganda of the kind of 1940s. Even when you look at, like, we mentioned this, you heard me on your show, David, about the fall of the British Empire. A lot of that was due to Zionist subversion from the Ham Wisemans. They were disrupting peace deals with the Ottoman Empire. There was Zionists in France that were disrupting the peace deals of the Ottoman Empire, because they know if the Ottoman Empire falls, they can then divvy up the territory, which is exactly what happened, and that's what led to the Balfour Declaration. Our empire fell so theirs could rise. There's so much subversion and rewriting of history. It's as soon as you scratch the surface, you can't ignore it anymore.
The Empire Windrush is a big eye-opener. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone's aware of Andrew Joyce's essay about the Empire Windrush, but holy shit.
I remember Laura Towler. A lot of people went to the archives for like news clippings at the time, and the story we are told is the Windrush, we took responsibility. It was we wanted them for Labour, even though at the same time, at the same time we were paying Send people to go to Australia.
Yeah.
But it was, when you look at the news clippings of the time, they were just dropped on us. It was completely unexpected. And we decided that we're just going to take this in the chin, which then led to the myth that we've always been diverse. We need these people. Yeah. I don't know. I've not read Andrew Joyce's thing, but I'm assuming he references that the ships were Jewish owned and it was complete subversion. But everything you're told is a lie. That's what you need.
That's basically it. Okay, now that Dank's back, there was some for him. One person asked, is Dank still a Lolbertarian? And I think we've established that you're not.
No, I'm a paleo libertarian. Which is the fun, totally serious term. That is called,
All right. Stephen says Marini's is the best Glasgow chip shop, or the Atlantic in Coatbridge. Atlantic won the best chip shop in the UK award twice.
That's the one down Sykeside. I mean, I would go there, but it's in Sykeside. Nobody wants to go to Sykeside.
Right. What's wrong with Sykeside?
Oh, it's just fucking dodgy as fuck down there, man. My sister used to live down there and she saw her neighbour get slashed. They don't go down there. I mean, I've never had the Atlantic Chippy. Apparently, it is really good. So,
All right. And then Stephen also asked, what does Count Dank think? Oh, no, I've already asked you that one. Right, okay. All right. And then Mr. Cholley said, it seems the Scots are going down the road of the South in America. We were subjugated by the North, by non-Southerners. Then later we were force integrated with non-whites, and now we're being flooded and all our big cities are occupied. Disproportionately, the usual ethno-religious group was involved, by the way. It's a similar thing in Scotland. Yeah, there's flooding off a small country, a small population. But it's not by England. It's more by, just the global governance. I think it's the same everywhere. It's the same with Ireland. It's the same as Sweden. All of these places. It's not so much that the English are doing this to Scotland.
I can't remember what guest you had on, but it was an English guy, and he said a trope that said all the time from kind of English nationalists, which always annoys me, is they say things like the English aren't allowed nationalism. But the Scots, the Welsh, and the Irish are allowed to be nationalistic. And you're like, that's just bullshit.
Yeah.
Scottish nationalism is neutered, like global homo nationalism, where we have new Scots, we have your Hamza Yousafs flying the flag. That's the nationalism we're allowed.
What do they ever celebrate about Scotland? Nothing. As I said earlier, what does the SNP actually celebrate about Scotland? If they were to say anything, it would be the same bullshit that is said about every other country. We're diverse, we're modern, we're progressive, we're open-minded. That's the only thing that they would ever say is good about Scotland.
The English are allowed the same nationalism as we're allowed, which is global homo nationalism. And I think that the thing that kind of puts Scottish nationalism in a picture for you is, I don't know if you remember the story, the Glen Sannox is the ship that the Scottish government built.
Mm-hmm.
Where the windows were painted on. That's Scottish nationalism. We launched Scottish nationalism and it's not functioning. The windows are painted on. It doesn't mean anything. There's no purpose to it. Like, there's no pride in it. It's, people That's just look at it and laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, I again, maybe controversial, but I think we need to move past even any idea of Scotland, England, Wales, even European. We are white. Europeans, white Europeans are under attack everywhere we are. We're becoming a minority. We're hated. And as I say, if you go to Africa, no one knows whether you're a Scot. They don't know whether you're English. They wouldn't be able to tell. But the one thing they do know is that you're white. And the one thing they do know is you're from Europe. Now, I don't know if pan-European nationalism would necessarily work, but a level of white racial consciousness is required. Because it is clearly an agenda against white people, wherever they are.
And I think this works for different people. I think this, like, some people get exactly what you're saying and easily get on board. Like, they care about Europeans, the European civilization and so on. Other people are much more attached. Like, they find that alienating. It's too big and vague. Whereas they're very attached to Ireland or Scotland or whatever, Sweden. So it's a, I understand what you're saying, David, but I just think it's one of those.
I go back to Hamza Yusuf's famous speech. How did he refer to these people? He never referred to them as Scottish.
Oh, look, I'm not white, saying you're wrong. I'm not disagreeing with you.
You know, it is visceral. You know, people say, it's just skin color. It's not. It is the most blatant difference that there are between people.
But the reason he said white is because he's just as Scottish as you, bro. That's why he said white, not Scottish. But I'm probably in the camp that Woz mentions. I think Europe as a whole, we're against the same enemy, the similar battle. But I also sympathise with that girl we mentioned earlier, who was recognising that a lot of these English people are moving to the islands. They're buying up property, not necessarily to live in, but maybe go there as a holiday escape, maybe rent out as a Airbnb, and it's then leading to the prices of houses going up. Like, I sympathise with that. Like, there's, when you visit the islands, they are very community-driven. They know each other. If there's a power outage, they're chapping someone's door to get the power back on. And they're seeing that kind of community dissolve, even with our neighbours moving here. And yeah. I'm not anti-English in any way, but the English, the Scottish, the Irish, the Welsh, but even the islands, we're against the same enemy, the same, in the same battle, but we don't want mass Polish people coming here. Sorry to your wife, David.
the analogy I would use is what happens in prison. How do gangs break down in prisons? Do gangs break down on class lines? Do they break down on national passport lines? Or do they break down on racial lines?
It's racial lines. And that
clearly racial. So
they break down on racial lines, but in Scottish prisons for the longest time before there was many foreigners in there. If you were a foreigner in a Scottish prison, like, you were fucked. If you were like a black guy in a Scottish prison, just that was you. You were the only one. You were getting butt fucked. you were fucked. But before that, it was wherever you were from. So,
we are approaching a place where we are in one giant prison, that's the situation that you're in, and you need to try and pal up with the biggest gang that's there, and the gang that's going to be closest to you. Remain differences. But
I agree with that. I agree the kind of unity as a whole. Like, I'm all for that. That's why I mentioned like the whole. Kind of people are remigration advocates for all these other countries all over Europe are kind of starting to communicate and plan. That's fine. But I think the argument you're having is, what's the best immigrant? Is it better to have a Polish immigrant or an immigrant from Nigeria?
I don't think we should have any at all. I think the border should be shut. And I think long term you should have mass deportations. I just think in the situation we're in, it is an all hands on deck.
That's fair.
And if you look at anybody who's tried to, I mean, that's what Gaddafi tried to do. It's what Saddam, tried to unite the Arabs. And that is always attacked. The power structure loves balkanization. The power structure loves a Syria situation. You know, they do not want unity.
I will not to go back to Israel, but that's how they played out the kind of taking over parts of Palestine, is they would put different tribes against each other. They would then make one of them the mayor and one of them the King Mufti or whatever, or head Mufti. I can't remember the terminology, and that was all about divide and conquer, which is it's a strategy that came from the empire. We'd done that loads. But so I get what you're saying. I don't want England to fall. If Scotland's okay, I don't want to look across the border and see that as everywhere is Bradford and everywhere's London. Like, that's brutal. So I get the kind of unity point, but I think I'm more of the, I want Scotland as a culture to prosper. I want England as their own culture to prosper. And you get the point.
But. Yeah. My point is that it really doesn't matter what any of us say about this? Like, whether you know, each of us is going to have his own position here, like natural loyalties and feeling of common, whatever. My point is, our preferences don't really matter here, because everyone else, like the general public, are all going to have different preferences here. So what matters is whatever works, basically. I'm very pragmatic about this. If someone is more galvanized by the idea of fighting for Scotland than for the idea of fighting for Europe, fine. I don't care, as long as they just do it.
It's got to start locally. Any of the changes that we're talking about have to start in our own communities, whatever we're doing. I mean, we're all content creators. We are hoping to reach an audience that are maybe looking for an alternative to what they get on the likes of the mainstream media, but even on YouTube. And we are quite a fractured, if I'm calling myself right wing, we are quite fractured within the right wing about so many different things, about foreign politics, foreign policy, for example. We've got different views. But I think for a turn of movement, if we're looking at what's going on in our own towns and villages, and there are some enclaves in Scotland. I regularly go to Comrie in Perthshire, and they have a fantastic setup there where it is all local people. It's a farming community, but it's all local people who have stayed there for generations, and they have something every year called the Flambeau. I don't know if you know this, where they walk through the town on New Year's Eve with... they're not crucifixes, but they're burning logs on fire. The young men in the village go through there and they throw all these logs over the bridge. Thousands of people come from everywhere. And this celebration had been attacked by the left, saying it was almost like some sort of Mississippi burning, whereas it's fuck all to do with that. This is just a centuries-old tradition. But because they're a very strong, close-knit community, and they've worked on this for a long, long time, they're able to repel those kind of things. So I get what David's saying about this European situation, and it is good to look overseas about what's happening. But in our own communities, we have to do as much as we possibly can to effect change.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think these local traditions are often what does galvanize people more than a sort of abstraction and of Europe or the race or whatever, even if that is ultimately what matters. And I agree, and I've said this many times, that...
Well, can I bring up the point in case, but the pub in your hometown?
Yes,
I know. That pub in your hometown, it was called the Black Female Dog, to keep everybody right. Now, that I went to sign that petition. I was part of that movement, and it had... SNP, Labour, Alex Salmond, of course, was a black female dog, as our hostess. And this galvanised people, and it got them together, and they forgot about party politics, and they just went to the local traditions. They were saying, no, we're not going to have this.
Yeah, I'm just waiting on Aberdeen boycotting the Noose and Monkey. It's a brutal name for a pub. I can see that. Hitting the headlines at some point.
I just think, again, if you look at human history, what we are witnessing is an aberration in human history. For most of human history, you had a tribe, and that tribe had a leader. And really, that was it. Yes, there was people at different parts in it. Democracy, mass mobilization of people, the defying the aristocratic principle, was actually against human nature. And I think, and there's an interesting argument about the Dune novels, where Frank Herbert said that eventually humans would return to that natural order, which is aristocratic in principle. Now, I actually don't like that. I tend not to like aristocrats, but you know what? That's the system that worked. And this system doesn't. And I think eventually it will return to that system. And it just will happen. The pendulum always swings.
Yeah, well, what I was saying, and I agree with you about that, but what I was saying is obviously the racial thing is the real target here. But, you know, and as you say, an African doesn't know and doesn't care. Probably doesn't even know that there is a difference between a Swede and a Scot or whatever. It's so alien to them. So, yeah, sure. But from our point of view, it's often the local that is more meaningful to people. And as I say, that galvanizes them. But it's not an either-or thing. And I think it's a big mistake to see it in that way. All right. Dying Cockneys said, "Woes is the based Alan Partridge we crave." Thank you. Well, thank you, I guess. Thanks very much. Now, Mr. Cholley said, on a side note, who was involved in the opioid problem in Scotland? In America, it was done by the Sackler family. But and the same company that makes... and the opioids disproportionately came from Teva Pharmacy, the same company that makes sex hormone blockers for kids. Jesus. Well, the heroin thing, I mean, that's a whole huge issue. I've no idea where heroin or who engineered anyone.
The Sassoon family.
Really?
Really behind the heroin. That was why the opium wars were fought with China, you know, for the ability to import opium into Britain, and that was the Sassoon family. And let's just put it this way: Sassoon isn't an Anglo-Saxon name. They were known famously as the Rothschilds of the East.
So it's not a Celtic name either, then.
No, it's not.
Right. Okay.
You know, I'm part of the Sassoon tribe. How dare you?
Well, they got into hair. They branched out into hairdressing. So that was a
all I remember is my dad talking about the ice cream walls in the East End of Glasgow. That's all I know about the opium epidemic.
Yeah.
All right. New124 said, "Is anyone aware of the under-22 bus pass situation? Drivers want rid of it as zombies wreak havoc. It was inevitable." Now standards have slipped. I've no idea. Under 22 bus pass situation. That's a very doesn't seem in keeping with everything we've been talking about, but maybe it is. Does anyone know anything about this?
No,
I think he's talking about the free bus passes for illegal migrants, Colin.
No, I think that's different. He's talking about an age bracket, but yeah, as soon as I seen that, I thought refugee bus passes. So you get free,
because that was
travel.
Something that just rubbed salt in a lot of wounds as well. So now the buses are going to be totally chock-a-block.
Yeah, I think I did see something about this now that you say it a few weeks ago. Well, I don't know. The way we handle this is, or the way our societies handle migrants and refugees is just insane to me.
Well, refugees are allowed to vote in Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even just putting them up in hotels, I mean, what the fucking hell are we doing?
But look, you arrived here 3 seconds ago. How do you think the country should run?
Yeah,
Democracy. Democracy's amazing.
Yeah. And then he also said, but there are too many Anglos in Scotland. Go up north and ask directions. It's all English accents. English liberals who are fleeing the diverse havoc they voted for down south. Alistair Gray talked about this, though, yes, he was a commie-tard.
That goes back to the we-were-never-asked thing. Even, I know some people mentioned about the boomers, but English, Welsh, Scottish, everybody's consistently voted against immigration, and we've still got it anyway. So it's not they voted for it, they voted for parties that promised to make immigration not as brutal, reduce the numbers, all that, and they've still got it anyway. So what they're describing, as I mentioned earlier, is white flight. That's the phenomenon you see in America.
That's right.
We're seeing that happen in Scotland. But my gripe, I'm sure all of you share it, is those that complain about English white flight are often very silent about primary schools where there's one white child in the school. There was a big story which ended up, they mentioned it in Parliament. It was mentioned in the news loads. There's people doing the news rounds for the school where Nicola Sturgeon visited a school in Glasgow, and there was one curly-haired, blonde, white boy in that entire class she visited. And she put the picture up as some PR thing. And obviously everyone reacted as they would, that's Scotland, what the fuck? And they went on the big fucking media tirade, like everything's racism. All the SNP diehards that complain about English white flight are talking about how racist it is to notice that obvious insult to our nation. But when it comes to English people, it's a fucking big issue.
Yeah, it's like the thing. Spare me. It's like the safe racism. You can get away with this. It's like when you hear English people moaning about the French. You know, it's just sort of, it's so limp and weak in the face of what's going on. But it's the thing you can get away with.
Someone mentioned the meme I made where I cropped the lone white collar-haired blonde boy, but it was that caption from 4chan, "If only you knew how bad things really were."
Yeah, I think I saw that. All right, Andy said, "I posted Anna Sarwar's anti-white diatribe," because this is the thing a lot of people don't know. They know about Hamza Yousaf's anti-white diatribe, but they don't know that Anna Sarwar, Yousaf's fucking political rival, did a similar speech. I think it was, I think it Anna Sarwar actually was before.
He was first.
Yeah. Amazing. Just fucking amazing. Can you imagine moving to China and doing that? I mean, it's just unthinkable. Anyway, Andy says, "I posted Anna Sarwar's anti-white diatribe on X, and a Scottish Labour supporter replied saying, 'I'm out of order,' and then tagged Police Scotland and said that he was doing his best to uncover my true identity." Fucking Jesus. Hell. Well, I hope that he doesn't succeed. But
I think the going to another country and being shameless and telling people how to do, I think there was a word coined for it that wasn't, it's not actually not even in the English language. The word is chutzpah, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. And then Rhodesian Ridgeback said, "Can the panel..." No, we already did that. Okay, that was fine. The NREB, "The creation of the Scottish Parliament only resulted in facilitating Stonybridge Council to operate at a national level." I think that's what we were alluding to earlier, so thank you for that. Shores in Flames, oh dear. "Would you rather sleep with Nicola Sturgeon, your kids come out as trans, or support the State of Israel?"
I'd sleep with Nicola Sturgeon.
Nicola Sturgeon. Great
guy. Right, okay. Everyone would sleep with Nicola Sturgeon.
I think everyone's going to need to just bite the bullet
on that one. Just, the team.
Yeah, just pump Nicola Sturgeon. Fuck it.
That profile picture is quite appealing, if I'm honest. Thanks. So.
That's nice, man. You just know she gives smashing gammies.
No, that tiny mouth.
All right. Keep it fairly decent for
Christmas. Like a chalk ice being munched on.
Fucking flycatcher.
Oh, fucking hell, man.
All right. The NREB said, "A Scottish or English politician has more in common with an Indian African politician than they do with their own countrymen. Just like a Scottish international footballer has more in common with an English international footballer than they do with their supporters. It's just a game to them." But the game runs out. I mean, look, you know, what would look at David Amos? But I also mean just when they retire. You know, they it's a limited thing. I think while it goes on, while it lasts, yeah, they're part of a club and all that. But it just seems rather shallow and limited to me. I don't know how they can be satisfied with it. Flawed but hopeful, "Discuss President Carter's death, please. Jimmy Carter has died while we've been streaming."
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, he was 100, so like, could have happened any fucking moment, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't think it was to do with this stream.
He's maybe opening a bottle of ketchup.
that's what it was.
Maybe.
I think Carter was an interesting guy because he was elected on such a huge 76 electoral mandate, because you just had Nixon, you had Gerald Ford, he was the peanut farmer, he was going to be the man, and you know, he was pretty reviled. I mean, I don't like Jimmy Carter, but out of them all, he was probably one of the most that spoke out against the Israel lobby, probably quite against war, but he was a sort of hippie experiment almost, Jimmy Carter, and America was a much more conservative country back then in the 1970s than it is now, and he was just way out, sort of ahead of his time, Carter. But yeah, he's America in the 70s is nothing like it is now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can see that just looking at the TV shows and the films that were made then. It's a totally very different culture. Very, very different culture. Actually far more waspy. And, yeah. And again, that brings me back to Police Academy in the 80s. All right. And then Rhodesian Ridgeback. This money was meant to be for my Israeli dom for a FinDom PayPig ATM meet that I'm contributing to you instead. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And Archie said, thank you for your dedication, Woz. Left a generous super chat. Thank you. And Restall said, to touch on the local and more pan-European nationalism, I feel that certain differences can be temporarily set aside. You saw that in Belfast during the August riots with the nationalists and unionists marching side by side.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember people saying that at the time, that this is what it takes to make those two sides join up. It was quite a strange moment. But yeah, and you know, there are memes I could show, but I'm not going to. But they sort of illustrate this principle that two opponents can join forces when they're up against something that will destroy them both.
There was an old Bedouin phrase that was something to do with that. It was something like, my brother against each other, me and my brother against the friend, me, my friend and brother against the neighbour. And then it was like all of us against the foreigner. So basically it means any internal disputes in like a geographic area, like any, if there's an external threat, that usually trumps all of those and everyone will start working together against it. I need to find the exact same thing.
I think the best meme to represent that I've seen when the kind of
Irish
and Northern Irish. Is it the... Yeah, no, it wasn't that one. It was a Lord of the Rings one. Well...
There's another one.
You beat me, right? I'll shut up now. But
no. There's also this one, which is fucking hilarious.
That's funny.
I think that's so good.
It was more the Lord of the Rings one, where the elf was fighting next to the... I don't know what the... I'm not a big Lord of the Rings man, but the kind of dwarf, whatever his fucking title is, where they go, I'm fighting next to whatever. And it was the kind of Irish and Republican.
Oh, yeah.
Never, I mean, that's the thing, Colin. I mean,
side with a Tig.
That was the one.
I am a big West of Scotland proddy, right? Unionist, loyalist background. I don't like the European Union. Clearly, they're different. But, I mean, in an ideal world, I could get away with being like that. But what I'm arguing is that ship has sailed. You know, the notion of, you know, differentiating between fellow Europeans, we are, our backs are against the wall. We're now competing against 1.5 billion Indians. Nigeria's going to have a population of like 400 million in 2050. You know, it is Camp of the Saints time out there.
I don't disagree with you. I agree. It's crazy. Whenever I hear people moaning about the English or the French or whatever, I just think, have you no idea what's going on?
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I have a lot of guests on from the Republic of Ireland. And again, you know, intrinsically, these are not my people, but I have an affinity with them because right now this, you know, their country is being destroyed. The Irish people survived 800 years of British rule. The Irish people will not survive 50 years of multiculturalism. It'll be finished.
It's like complaining about your neighbour stealing your Amazon package while your house is getting raided. Fucking prick next door.
Well, since Lord of the Rings was mentioned, that's a good time for me to show this meme that was created by a friend of mine while we've been doing this stream. So here it is, and this is for Count. This is for Dankula.
Oh, smashing. For Farage. Fucking hell.
There we go. All right, well, on that note, let's wrap this one up. I think it's been good, it's been fun, it's been quite varied. We've gone through very funny bits and then also very serious and gloomy bits as well. So it's
and my microphone Scots. Was muted for about typical half an Scots, hour. Then. That was fun.
Yeah, that's a real Scottish banquet.
Yes.
We're doomed. Yeah. We're doomed.
Aye, from dog junkie to we're fucked.
I also, when somebody was talking about how bad the weather is in Scotland, and it reminded me of this photo that I saw the other day. So I was going to show it, but it didn't come. There wasn't an appropriate moment, and this isn't either, really. But I think it's quite funny to end with this. So I was reading about Trainspotting. I was just researching the two films, and I found this photo of a Scottish pub, and I thought, bloody hell, that is grim. Here it is.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, hell, man.
Brilliant.
Apparently, some scene in the sequel was shot in this pub. Isn't that fucking grim? But,
that's been surrounded by police tape many a time. Oh, like, you just know it has.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, all right.
I will say I'm kind of gutted we didn't get onto the assisted dying. I know David was going to mention it, but yes. I know we're running over time, but I appreciate you.
Well, with the bankers, again. I want to keep them fairly upbeat. But, I mean, I understand. It's obviously a major issue. I know, and I don't mean to be dismissive, but it's, yeah, I get it. I've actually written a thing about that, which I'll publish sometime next year, because it is it's a timely issue. And people are talking about it all the time, so it's important. But
look forward to it.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks to all four of you for taking part. It's been fun. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I've had fun.
Yeah. Well done. Well done, everyone. Well done, Colin. Great effort. Okay.
Thank you, Marcus. All right, I'll be back in about half an hour for the open hangout. God knows how that's going to go. We'll just have to wait and see. It might not. It might last 10 minutes, or it might last 5 hours. I've no idea. All right, but in the meantime, thank you everyone for taking part. I'll see you all later.
See you, bye.
On this anniversary year, a true bounty can be found in the merchandise store. T-shirts, mugs, and an incredible range of posters. All exclusive products. Every one the perfect way to remember this unique time. At the end of the festival, a very special poster will be available. But no need to wait for that. See what you can pick up today.